This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard.
Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was...
Come on, Rudy. Come on. We call it
the place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Channel Lawson Bram? Skid of a rinky dinky dink?
Yeah.
Skid of a rinky do?
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking hoe train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. 5 years. 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richards. Let me see this with your dad for me. Put all your hands with my eyes to see. Straight up ballin' in the place to be. If you really wanna party with me. And God we trust. Yo, it's a must that you heard of us. Yo, we murder us. A lot of niggas is wondering and they curious. How me and my niggas do it is so mysterious. Furious. All of my niggas is serious. Shook niggas be walking around fearing us. Front nigga like you don't wanna be hearing us. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your host, Justin Rosero. Coming at you live here on this Sunday evening. And Scott Criscola, it's we always shake things up here when it comes to WrestleMania week. How are you, sir? I am great, JR. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 443 of the Gold Standard, the mothership. We always do. March is always the weird month where we just throw schedules out the window. We just watched.
They don't call us Pricks to Be Nation for nothing, you know.
Exactly. I mean, all we do is inconvenience people and treat them like dirt. I mean, you know. But we are here, and we got a great show tonight. How are you, sir? You look like you had a busy day again yesterday. You're gonna have your own. You're gonna see on Nick Kids. What's the other? Isn't there another Nickelodeon Kids channel? I don't know. I thought there was another name for it, but you'll be on to being on Nick Kids. You'll be the one like
you're so out of touch. It's Nick Jr. And yes, it's a nonstop whirlwind life when you have all these children around. So it's party after party after weekend, never ending, sir. But I always make time for you somehow, somewhere along the way, and all the fans out there, Place to Be Nation.
Maybe you should put all these parties on YouTube.
Maybe they are.
They could be.
Maybe they are.
Just never know.
So anyway, yeah. So WrestleMania week, we have a jam packed week here on PlayStation.com as we always do. Double banger this week. We have a clotheslines and headlines and main event, Scott. So what we did was we pushed ourselves up a night so we could still get this show in. And then, of course, I'll be traveling down yonder to Orlando later this week for the big WrestleMania 33 festivities. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, as well as the tailgate that'll be happening, of course. But more on that in a while, because tonight, Scott, as we always do, we're heading way back to 1985.
Yes, we are, JR, and we're not in our office. We loaned our offices at Madison Square Garden. Modern day, today, of course, South Carolina and Florida were at the Garden. We'll check a little later in the pop culture report to see if the Rangers or the Knicks were playing in our building on
I'm
this
sure
evening.
Steve Rogers checked in and is watching it on Facebook if they were. So.
Yes, exactly. Let me look. I'll have to check the NBA scores. But there was no NHL game there that night. But anyway, we are about we're in our satellite office, JR, because we have many offices, of course. Mm-hmm. And we're at our satellite office in Chicago tonight at our beloved Rosemont Horizon. For tonight, we bring you the wrestling classic. Now, courtesy of WrestleVision. I wonder what Vince was thinking with that at the time. Was that supposed to be like a
I wonder if he was trying to rebrand. Like, I'm curious about that. I don't think we ever – I know we dealt in it the last time we did this one, you know, a while back, but
– Well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the first official pay-per-view, right? So I wonder if, like, his idea was that anything on pay-per-view would be called WrestleVision. Or do you think that was a home video thing? Like, what do you think the – I just feel like it's probably any time they were going to be on pay-per-view, maybe he thought he'd say it's WrestleVision, you know, coming at John pay-per-view. I think it was just him trying to brand another thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that it was part of, like, the history of the WWF volume something and maybe WrestleVision. Maybe WrestleVision was going to replace Coliseum Video.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe the branding. I'm not sure. In any event, we are here tonight because we got a couple of big things, JR. We have a tournament, the first of many great tournaments we will have throughout World Wrestling Federation / entertainment history. Mm-hmm. This one's for that beautiful Rolls-Royce Shadow, I think it was. Gorgeous car. My God, a gorgeous car. I don't know where Vince got the money. Well, I guess WrestleMania did pretty well if he could afford a Rolls-Royce Shadow.
Could have been like an insurance thing, too. You know, they do giveaways, like different contests. You can get insured against the cost of the prize or whatever. So it might have been something like that. Yeah,
that's true. And we will have, JR, a World Wrestling Federation Championship match. I know I've been saying the last few months, God, where's Hogan? Yep. Well, we will have our champion tonight in a match that, in my opinion, could have gone either way, but we had this kind of discussion when last time we did this show. But we got a lot to talk about. 16-man tournament, a lot of the great superstars of the World Wrestling Federation. But on this evening, we will have a guy who's going to step up, and we will see that he was meant for bigger things. Mm-hmm. This was a coming out party for one of the big superstars in the company. All right, let's go to November 7th. 1985 from the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, Illinois, in the suburb of Rosemont. I don't want to be wrong. It's not actually Chicago. It's the suburb of Rosemont. But technically, everybody says Chicago. Your announcers are, of course, the great Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body Ventura. What do we have for a attendance? It's not a huge building. So what was it, like 11,000 probably?
14,000 here tonight.
No, 14. Solid crowd. Good, yeah. Good.
The new WrestleVision was on the marquee.
That is correct, yes. I believe it's near the airport, if I remember correctly, in the burbs there. But
Brandon's 12,000. We have 14, so I'm going to figure somewhere in between there.
All right, we'll say 13 then. So probably close to 13,000 at Rosemont Horizon for this big show. Of course, we have Vince. Actually, Gorilla and Jesse are doing the play-by-play in the color, but Vince, Lord Alfred Hayes, and what the heck was her name?
Susan Wackus.
Wackus, in that pretty frilly little... fairly little dress, and we thought that with no Mean Gene around that, you know, she'd be spared from all the lechery,
no.
But no, that did not happen, of course.
She was lechered over and over.
Lechered over and over by, as we head into the tournament, JR, anything on your mind, anything before we dive into this? Big 16-man tournament. What are you thinking right now as we head in here?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking I'm excited. I'm thinking I'm ready to get going here, Scott, because we do have some stuff to cover before the opener. Mm-hmm. And, of course, WEF squeezing in one more pay-per-view here before the year ends. That was an interesting concept. Have you noticed, too, like, they didn't mention this thing at all. I mean, we haven't been watching TV, but they didn't mention on Saturday Night's Main Event. And usually they'll spend time talking about these things on the MSG commentary, but they didn't mention it there at all.
No.
So, I mean, I'm sure it was obviously talked about on the weekend syndicated shows, but not on any of these that we've watched here so far. And we didn't get this far with TNT on the Network Adventure, so we can't speak for that either. But not a lot of hype as far as it came for MSG and Saturday Night's Main Event.
Yeah, I'm kind of perplexed by that as well. I'm guessing maybe on the Cindies, maybe the Saturday Morning Superstars or whatever, you know, the Championship Wrestling in Allentown or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe they mentioned it. I'm sure locally in the Chicago market, they probably, you know, like in the commercials for the Cindy shows, maybe they did mention that the show was coming.
I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure it was mentioned on TV. I mean, I don't think that it's had a pay-per-view with zero promotion. So it's just interesting to me that we haven't heard anything about it. Like, I would have thought the MSG shows, at least they would have mentioned it on commentary. But
well, we haven't. We, with the network, of course, with our Network Adventure, the TNTs stopped in June.
Yeah, that's what
so,
I was saying. Yeah.
Or July. So, excuse me. So maybe, you know, maybe in the TNTs in September, October, right. maybe they did talk about it. But we did. We didn't get to see those. The WWE Network cut the TNTs off. And do we even get to July? I think it was late June. I think
there's one July one. But anyway.
Maybe there's one July one. But anyway, we didn't see any of the TNTs. But again, maybe the local market,
right?
You know how we do the local, you know, Westchester County Center.
No, I think even beyond that. I mean, I'm sure it was hyped on TV. But anyway. So Vince opens the show, visits with Lord Al, and a hostess, like you mentioned, Susan Watkiss, to review the tournament tracker. He says the brackets were randomly drawn earlier today, and Alfred puts over how tough it will be to win a tourney like this. Vince runs through all the first-round matchups, and we actually get footage of some of the lottery drawings from earlier today as well. Gene is then backstage with President Jack Tunney, who puts over the importance of the show and how the Dota F puts on quality programming for its fans. Tunney says the only rule you have to is that you have to win to advance, and a draw would mean a double elimination. And then Vince then throws it up to Gorilla and Jesse to kick things off and set the stage as they're calling the show for us tonight.
And I'll tell you something. I mean, even as a kid, I vaguely remember Tunney till, like, I don't remember really seeing Tunney till mid-'86 or whatever, but man, he was pleasantly plump in 85.
Yeah, he definitely trims down.
Him and Frank were missing it.
Yeah, over the next couple of years, he definitely trims down.
Yeah, he definitely, him and his brother Frank haven't missed a meal at the Toronto steakhouses. So let's get started, JR. 16-man tournament. And it's for, did they have a price? Actually, I want to correct this. The car was a contest.
Yes.
Yes, the car was a contest. Did they ever give a what was it, 25,000, 50? Did they give a, I'm trying to remember now. Let me check my notes.
For the prize for the tournament?
Yeah, was there a tournament prize?
Because I feel like they were talking about it, but I don't remember a specific amount ever being named.
Yeah, I don't either. It was some type of prize.
Yeah.
But I want to correct. The car, the Rolls-Royce Shadow, was a contest.
Right.
And they would do that later on in the show.
Yeah. We'll
All right, let's dive in. We have 8 first-round matches. We will begin with a guy that we've been paying attention to quite closely, JR. He's been at the Garden often in 1985, taking on a relative newcomer. And who do we got?
That is, of course, Adrian Adonis, the man we've been tracking pretty closely. Like you mentioned, he's had some changes going on. He was managed by Bobby Heenan and carried around a briefcase, and now he's with Jimmy Hart. Not really carrying the briefcase as much, but he's still with Jimmy Hart now, and he is taking on Corporal Kircher, the man we talked about, I believe, at our last MSG show that we covered. So the Corporal is here, of course, pretty much being positioned as a replacement for Sergeant Slaughter, a young up-and-coming replacement for Sergeant Slaughter, who's been gone for a little bit, a while now. But it seemed like they wanted to have another American military man in the company. But he's young, he's green, and we'll see if he comes along. I didn't think that MSG match we watched was too bad out of him. It was a little bit longer. I thought he struggled more than he probably should have, like we talked about at the time. But anyway, we'll see how he does here tonight in the opener against Adonis. And I think it's a solid opener. Adonis has been rolling, Kircher working himself. This is a golden opportunity for him. Adonis still with Jimmy Hart, rocking that leather street gear. And Gorilla mentions that Adonis is bulked up. Yet again.
Yes, he has.
And he's not wrong any of these times. You know, it's like, you know, you keep thinking he's just repeating himself, but he is bulking up month over month here.
Mm-hmm.
Match opens up with a lockup and a stalemate. Jesse doesn't think Kircher is ready for the type of tactics that Adonis will use, but the Corporal strikes first with a pair of arm drags. Gorilla notes that the time limit is just 10 minutes here in round one, and Kircher works a headlock and grinds Adonis down. As Gorilla says, the winner of this tournament could write his own ticket. Adonis twists out of the hold and starts laying in some heavy blows before leaning into a rear chin lock. Kircher powers up and punches away, but Adonis blocks a suplex with a reverse bulldog for the win. Fine little bout. I thought a nice strong win by Adonis. Kircher looked fine too, just falling a little bit in the end due to inexperience, which is the story they tell. 235, which, Scott, may actually be the longest match. No, it's not. But it feels like maybe it was because it is express line central through this first round. So Adonis moves on. I thought easy decision here, right?
Oh, there's no doubt. I gave it a half star. I mean, it was fine for what it was. I think you needed to
Did
put the...
Did I get
the...
my grade? I went a half star as well. I'm not sure if I said it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I agree. What I think they needed to do in this tournament was really showcase the big stars. I mean, this could end up being a yearly thing if he decides to, so you kind of want it not to be kind of a joke, even though they maybe do at times. 235, nothing, obviously, no great shakes there. Really nothing else to say. I mean, Adonis is the solid heel. Obviously, more changes were the offing for him as we head to the end of the year and into 1986. But Corporal Kirshner, you know, he wasn't ready for this. He was obviously relatively new. And it was comfortable enough to, you know, let him get jobbed out or whatever or lose cheap. And be fine with it. So
of course, it was Spot. Munuk's body fought back in September, his debut, where Spot took a bunch of offense on him. We were like, what the hell? You know, as this Kircher knowledge as well, but it seems like they were taking the other tact with him, is working him, you know, up slowly, playing on his inexperience versus having him come in as like a guy that would just mow through people.
Exactly.
But no, Adonis has been impressive. We talked about it every month here so far. He's been one of my favorites to watch as we've done this. And that continues here. I'm glad he got a win. I'm glad he was a guy that was chosen to be in this spot versus a couple of the other ones later in the first round where they'll have guys bow out. I thought it was a smart move because he's been so over and they really started to push his association with Jimmy Hart. I thought it worked out well to make him one of the guys that advances.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Kirshner will be fine. He'll, you know, he's not going to go anywhere. Yeah. He'll be at the moment. My point being, he's not like leaving anywhere. He's perfectly fine where he is. And Adonis was needed for the way things were laid out later on in the show. So Adrian Adonis moves on. Who will his opponent be?
We'll find out.
Mr. R. And our next first round matchup pits a stalwart who's actually had a pretty good 1985 against a guy who's had a good 85 and is going to have an even better 86. Who do we have?
Before we get to that, Gene is in the aisle. Catches up with Jimmy Hart and Adonis after his match. And Hart calls him adorable Adrian Adonis. I think it's one of the first times we've heard that. Adonis rips Kircher and tells him how to learn the hold. Says he has all class and charisma, and him and Jimmy Hart are rewriting the business. So there you go. Our next match, yes, is the Dynamite Kid battling Nikolai Volkoff, former tag team champion. And Dynamite, of course, part of the British Bulldogs, a team trying to climb that ladder. And these two teams, of course, heading in different directions. Nikolai and Sheik still working as a unit, but pretty much on their way down. Dynamite and Davey Boy Smith working their way up towards hopefully a match with the Dream Team. Dynamite gets a nice pop while the heat just rains down on Volkoff. Nikolai requests to sing the national anthem, as always, but as soon as he finishes and the bell rings, Dynamite comes off the top with a missile dropkick and steals the Flash win. And that is it for poor Nikolai. I thought this was a fun bit. To reestablish, you know, establish the format of the tournament, establish the importance of the bouts, that you shouldn't be fucking around, you should be paying attention. I thought Dynamite made him look really smart, the way he just perched up there and waited. And you get a good pop and buzz for Dynamite to win. I mean, you know, this probably wasn't going to be that great anyway, so if you're going to sacrifice a guy, Nikolai, you know, he's fine, he's not going to get hurt by this loss, and you get to play off the national anthem, and Dynamite's a cool guy to outwit a guy like Nikolai. So I like the way they did this. I was fine with this just being a quick, you know, whatever, 5-second match, and Dynamite gets to win. And I think it's kind of funny that this goes 6 seconds, and there's no talk of records. Like, they don't even bring it up. I mean, we were, like, you know, going crazy over Bundy's record at WrestleMania 1, and then, of course, crazy over who broke it? Was it Elmer on Saturday's Main Event?
Elmer, yeah, to our man Gentleman Jerry there.
Right, he broke it. So, I mean, we're not even talking about it here. It's kind of funny. But anyway, that just kind of stood out to me because the records have been such a conversation piece at 85. But what'd you think of this? I went dud, obviously, but it was a fun dud.
I gave it a dud, too, because just on principle, you kind of have to. But I had no problem with this. It was a good storyline hook. We had more important to deal with later. You know, I mean, who really wanted to see, you know, Nikolai lumber with poor kid for, you know, 6 minutes or something? That wasn't going to happen. This was fine. You wanted kid in this because... he was just going to give you better matches later. And again, Nikolai's a guy. He's Nikolai. Who cares? He lost. And, you know, a week later, no one will remember anyway. So it's perfectly fine. I'm good with it. So our first quarterfinal, JR, is Adrian Adonis and Dynamite Kid, which actually is kind of a fascinating match.
Yeah.
Because if there's one guy who you wouldn't think could hang with Dynamite Kid in a match, but will, it's Adrian.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you probably think, you know.
It should be a fun power versus speed match. It was definitely one. I thought these first two were booked perfectly. I wouldn't have asked for anything different of how they went.
No, absolutely. I agree. So, a little Mean Gene action backstage, or we check the brackets? I know we go backstage.
Yeah, we do go backstage, where he's chatting with Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Savage all fired up for this big tournament, discusses his superb conditioning, and Liz says, it's a big night. So, there you go. Setting up our next match.
It's a big night. Don't stop talking. All right.
It's a big night, Gene. So, you know, she's just so nice. She's just so simple. You know, there's not much else to say. Just, it's,
all right.
It's a big night. Here we are.
Yep. And speaking of a big night, guess what? Yeah. Speaking of what up, Mach? The Macho Man is in his first match of the evening, and he takes on one of Jesse Ventura's favorite wrestlers, JR. Who is it?
Well, it's the Polish power, Mr. Ivan Putski.
Putski.
Gets a warm reception, but he feels like a jobber. He's just standing in the ring when you come back from backstage. No entrance. He's just there. But Macho Man and Elizabeth, and this will be a theme throughout the night, they march to the ring with the regal music. They feel and they're presented like megastars, the robes flowing. everything about them to scream superstar presentation. And that, to me, that's a theme throughout this night, the way he's presented. But it's glaring here when Putski's just roaming around the ring aimlessly like, you know, Ron Renzi in episode 17. just with no direction. You know, he's just standing
all
there
right,
looking around. And
all
waiting
right.
to
start. Stirring the pot.
Right?
So all right. Shut and, that.
Set up the Putski special. But no, so Savage and Liz come out. They get a huge huge presence. Gorilla notes how Savage has Liz behind him instead of a normal manager situation where the manager usually leads out their charge. He's got Liz behind him. Jesse, this is going to be another theme throughout the night. He says he's worked out with and prepared Savage for this entire tournament. So he said they've been working together. You know, Savage is his boy, and they've been working hard to make sure he was ready for the tournament, been training and working on strategy and everything else. So Savage stalls, messes with Putski a bit. He finally gets impatient, tries to come at him. Savage finally gets inside, and we get a lockup, but Putski breaks it and spits in Savage's face. Savage bails to regroup as Jesse shits on Paduski for his actions. Savage gets back in, and we get a stalemate on a shoulder block as Jesse says Savage has to rely on brain power in this one, not physical power. Putski continues to overpower Savage until Macho goes to the eyes and jabs away. Putski grabs a side headlock to cut him off and spikes him to the mat. Putski unloads some right hands and keeps bringing the fire in the corner until Savage scoops out the legs and covers him using the ropes for leverage and getting the cheap win. Liz makes a sour face over the cheating, but Savage just pushes her to the back quickly as Putski comes stomping after them angrily. This was building to what could have been a good match, I thought, Scott. But due to the format, of course, it had to end quickly, and we'll see that throughout the evening, so it kind of killed any potential. As it was, though, I kind of liked the power versus speed and brains competition. I thought they did it well, and the finish was very disappointing. It was soft. It was kind of awkward, the way he tried to roll him up and cheat. But it did pay off the idea that Savage has to outsmart Putski. Savage moves on. I went half a star, but I was a little disappointed. I feel like this was an MSG and one of those matches that maybe would have gotten 13, 14 minutes. I could have really built into something, which is surprising. I didn't expect it from Putski, but I liked the story they were starting to tell, and then it ended right as I was getting into it.
Yeah, I gave it a star. I actually enjoyed it for the 2 minutes and 45 seconds. I do like, obviously, hearing Jesse say, "Ivan Paduski, it's Putski." Yeah, that's what I said, Paduski.
Speaking of Jesse, though, unless you have this in your notes, but what did you think of this whole relationship with Savage? I mean, it's, I don't know, like he really beats him to the ground throughout the night and establishes how they're, you know, he's almost like he's his manager in some ways, or his advisor, which I thought was kind of weird. And I don't know, like Savage feels like a superstar guy that didn't really need like advisement from Jesse. Not that it's not a cool heel pairing, but did it feel like a little forced on Jesse's end to you?
Yes and no. I think that Jesse does add a little something to Savage at this moment. Do I think that they kind of brought it out of nowhere and it's not really organic? Yes. But I think that what you're seeing here is Vince probably thought, you know what? I look at Savage and I say, this guy's going to be a stud. I think it's pretty comfortable to say it's, you know, Captain Obvious. But you know what? Why don't I give him a little extra juice, particularly since we have so many big baby faces in this tournament. And of course, we've got the world champion later on. Why don't we give him a little extra juice and make Jesse really push him. Because 1986 is obviously going to be, you know, probably a big year for him. So I think that it's okay. And I think, cause it is Jesse and Jesse's cool. The bromance, it probably doesn't end for, you know, probably most of his time there. And that's okay because Jesse.
Well, I don't mind
seems
the bromance. I don't mind him putting him over. I just thought it was weird how they were acting like they were in cahoots. You know, like he's his trainer or his tag partner or something. You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe they had plans for Jesse to get back in the ring at some point and for them to work together. But I don't mind when he puts him over constantly. I mean, that's like you said, the rest of his career. But it just surprised me a little bit how much they were selling like this was like a partnership, almost like Jesse was going to manage him. It felt like that more to me. It almost felt like Bobby or Perfect with Flair, like in 92, you know, like where he's like a special advisor where he's like, you know, just talking about them being a unit.
Like a silent partner almost.
Yeah, instead of him just putting them over, they're actually acting like they're a team.
Maybe that's just Jesse kind of going into business for himself. Yeah. And what's Vince going to say? Whatever. Do what you got to do. So maybe he went above and beyond putting him over. So that might be what it is. I don't know if they had any. I'm not going to to tip the hand that there was something planned. I'm just going to say that Jesse may have kind of went overboard on the putting Savage over and, you know, making him like the guy and my guy and that kind of thing. So I'm going to keep it at that. I don't know if there was any plan in the future. Obviously Jesse, you know, is an occasional worker anyway. We've seen him occasionally. We're going to have actually a match. He's going to be wrestling our next when we're back in our home office. So if you remember, if you listened to our October house show vault, we know that he's going to be wrestling in 3 weeks back at the Garden. So I think he was just probably going above and beyond. He might have gone into business for himself. I'm going to go with that because I don't know if I don't think we needed a whole entourage. If he needed if he wanted a male manager, we wouldn't need Elizabeth. So I think Jesse went kind of into business for himself and went a little over above and beyond. That's my take. I don't know if they ever had anything planned for Jesse to do something like on camera over a consistent amount of time with Savage. I'm going to stick with that. I don't think there was anything in the plans. I think Jesse just maybe wanted to put instead of just, you know, I'm the heel commentator. I've got to just put the heel over and over and over. Maybe he's like, you know what? Why don't I kind of turn the corner on this a little bit and yeah, maybe make people think I am his, silent partner. I'm his Svengali or whatever. You know what I mean? And that's just Jesse, you know, and Jesse just, because he's so good at it, he maybe fooled a few of us into thinking it. And maybe it was just him kind of, you know, stirring the pot a little bit. So, in any event, the Macho Man moves on to the quarterfinals. Who will he face? This is one of my favorite matches in terms of build. Well, before that, we go backstage get a little update on the tournament. JR, what do we got?
Yeah, Vince, Alfred, and Susan bring us up to speed in the tracking room. Nikolai comes in and rants and raves about getting robbed. Vince trolls him about singing the anthem one too many times, but Nikolai says he will get the last laugh. So, not happy. But yes, next up. Yep, go.
I was going to say angry trolling.
Yes, right.
happens all the time.
What kind of person
I hate when people do that.
King of the
Giffies. This match makes me laugh because of the build. the build before the show when they did the looking at the tournaments. Our match here, JR, let me give the matchup because it just makes me laugh. It is the other half of the British Bulldogs, JR, Davey Boy Smith. We saw his tag team partner, Dynamite Kid, a moment ago against one of our favorite guys here in our refresh. And that is, of course, the Dragon, Ricky Steamboat. And my favorite moment is when earlier in the show when they're like, you know, going over the picking the matchups and stuff, and Steamboat's his guy, Davey Boy Smith, and he kind of goes, oh, he's a good man. He's a smart man, but he's a good man. What the fuck does that mean? He's such a good man.
No, he's just saying he's a good guy. You know? He doesn't want to have
he's
to fight him.
He's a good, smart man.
He's a good man. He's a great husband, great family man. Doesn't want to go out there and hurt this guy. He's a good guy. You know, he's not going to have to battle any treacherous. You know, this is a guy that's getting choked out and feuded with Don Morocco. You know, his blood feud.
I know.
So
that's
true. He's shocked to have to fight just a nice quality human being like Davey Boy Smith.
I have to face a good man. So anyway, I'll bring it to you. So we got the Steamer and the Bulldog.
Yeah, nice touch here, I thought, with the face-face matchup. It kind of sells the lottery format nicely. Really intriguing on paper. Jesse promises that we'll see Dirty Tricks and Greed come out at some point, but Gorilla disagrees, says they'll play fair thanks to their high character. We open up with a spirited exchange of holds, capped by a Davey hip lock and pin attempt, but Steamboat bridges into a backslide for two. Davey comes back with a big press slam for two and then hooks in a tight front face lock. Steamboat blocks a suplex and reverses into a perfect delayed vertical, but Davey blocked a splash with his knees. Smith leveled him with a pair of standing dropkicks and just started to catch fire, but Steamboat blocks a third dropkick attempt, and Smith careens into the ropes, crotching himself hard enough on the rope that the referee calls the match due to injury. Steamboat checks on his friend before accepting the victory. I just kind of a cheap way out. Match never really got rolling. It was fun while it lasted, but I don't know. I was just really disappointed. Steamboat moves on, right? That's the right call to me, but this deserves a better showcase. Like, if there was any match that should have gotten maybe 5 or 6 minutes, I would have let this one go on. And I don't know. I mean, it was a great bump, but kind of a stupid ending. Like, why can't I? How about he just gets, like, knocked to the floor and he can't get it back in the ring in time or something? You know, like, that's a little bit more believable. Like, when do we ever see the ref just stop a match? And I know it was a rough low blow, but It just felt forced yet again. Like, we're already being forced to believe that these matches that normally go pretty long on this night are all ending, you know, in quick fashion. Now, you can explain that by saying, in kayfabe, the wrestlers know there's a 10-minute time limit and they have to hustle, right? I mean, you could say that. So, fine. Right. Suspend disbelief. But when do we ever get a guy getting his balls hurt on the ropes and then we call the match? Like, why couldn't he have done that bump and fallen to the floor and just not recovered? Like, minor thing. Minor bitch. It's fine. But to me, that would have been a little more... a little easier to stomach, a little bit more believable, that's all. But again, Steamboat moving on is good. We already have one bowler going on. But I feel like we got robbed here of what could have been a really fun match.
I agree with you 100%. I went a star and a half on this one.
Did I give my grade? I keep forgetting if I'm giving the grade or not.
No, you didn't give your grade.
Half a star.
I know what it is, but okay. I see our notes. Yeah, I gave it a star and a half. I liked it. I liked for the 253. I thought it was fun. Were we robbed? Absolutely. I don't know if it's George Scott or if it's fucking Skoland or Pat or I don't know who, but who came up with the idea? All right, Davey boy, this is how you're going to lose. You're going to get hit in the balls and not continue. I'm sure he's looking at him like, what? What are you talking about? I want to power slam him. No, you're going to have no balls. It's like, I mean, who gets hit in the balls and can't continue? I mean, you know, I don't know. It's and if you look closely, they replay it. The rope really doesn't hit him in the crotch. It kind of hits him like in the inside thigh. It's not even like a real crotch. I don't know. They had to find a way for Steamboat to advance without jobbing Davey Boy out.
Right.
But why not have a – what's wrong with having a solid 6.5-minute match and Steamboat just beats him with a good move? What's the problem? I mean, is that whole 1985 kind of kayfabe, oh, good guy, can't have him lose clean? I mean, come on. Sometimes I still say sometimes to this day, even in the Federation era, they had to think outside the box on some of these things. I mean, don't forget, he's a tag team wrestler. You know, he's not going to wrestle singles for quite a while if he ever does. At this point, you never knew. But what's wrong with him wrestling a good 6:15, 6:20 match and, you know, Davey Boy just gets beat with a good move? I mean,
right.
Let's be honest.
Steamboat's position is one of the very top faces. Like,
exactly. I mean, you're not talking about losing clean to fucking Moondog Rex or something. I mean, it's a legit guy. You're talking about
They could have went toe to toe, and Steamboat hits him with a big crossbody and you know, ratchets him up for the pin. I mean, there was definitely ways to do it. And you're asking him to take a pretty shit bump too. I mean, I'm sure he can protect himself, but you're asking this guy to hang himself by his nuts across the rope.
It's
not like the easiest finish. I think if you wanted a fuck finish and not a pin, just have him get knocked to the floor and not be able to climb back in on time. But I just thought this felt forced. Like, I don't know. I just felt weird that we got there and the ref stops it pretty quick. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't really give him a second to like sell it. I don't know. And it's again, to me, it's a real theme. Throughout the night that we just get these weird shoehorn finishes. It's like they felt like they have to overcompensate for the long card. When there was more natural ways to go about it.
There's absolutely natural ways to go about it. And again, it just goes back to the top that, you know, these are two solid workers who, you know, could eat a loss and not get killed. I mean, obviously, you know, Steamboat was moving on.
I don't think you want to hurt... I don't think I'd have Steamboat take. I don't think he could take the loss.
No. I'm talking about if you.
Well, you said either guy. So my point is, I don't think you want to beat him with the Morocco stuff. I think Davey can easily take a loss here.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. As we've said, he's a tag team wrestler. No one's going to remember that he lost a singles match in a tournament. No one's going to remember that. You know, now if it was him and Dynamite and they lose to the Moondogs, well, that's different. But you're talking about a singles wrestler in a throwaway tournament. And, you know, this is more about seeing a quarterfinal match of Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage. And that's fine. So I would have no problem booking Davey Boy losing clean or, you know, you're talking about a baby face and B, probably one of the three best guys in the whole company. So I think it would have been very fine for Davey Boy to lose clean and Steamboat move on. But he loses anyway. I have soft nuts. And your quarterfinal match is indeed Randy Savage and Ricky Steamboat. And on paper, before even figuring out anything, you're already thinking to yourself, this could be pretty good.
Yeah.
And maybe – and I think this was – well, when we get to that match later, I'll bring up an interesting point. So backstage we go, a little Mean Gene or Vince or is Alfred humping her by now?
he's trying. No, Gene's,
Mean Gene's, Mean Gene's jealous he can't be at the bracket. So.
Instead, he's talking to the Junkyard Dog, who talks about his upcoming match with the Iron Sheik, puts over his credentials, and says he's just excited to be here. And, of course, that is our next match, the Junkyard Dog taking on the Iron Sheik, the other half of that Ford Legion that we discussed earlier.
Asian.
The crowd all over Sheik, but they're fired up as JYD stomps down to the ring. Sheik attacks before the bell and chokes with his robe, and Sheik keeps stomping and choking away as Gorilla calls this the most important tournament in wrestling history and also warns Sheik that a DQ would mean elimination. The crowd rallies JYD as he powers up and fires away with punches and headbutts. Sheik bails to the floor and comes in and grabs a full Nelson. JYD powers out and mows down Sheik with a clothesline for two. The Dog whiffs on a falling headbutt, and Sheik grabs a camel clutch. Gorilla and Jesse write this one off. They say that's about it. The JYD actually gets his arms off the legs and forces Sheik to break to Jesse and Gorilla's surprise. Sheik keeps the strikes coming, slugging JYD in the corner. But as Sheik gets tied up with the ref, the Dog levels him with a headbutt for the win. Another fine enough match, Scott. Didn't really hang around long enough to get dragging on, but another soft finish. Like, it just... None of these finishers feel also rushed and out of nowhere. And again, it goes back to what I said earlier. I can accept the kayfabe that these guys are working extra hard because they're within 10 minutes, but they're not always feeling that way. We're feeling we're just getting, it's like Survivor Series matches that we'll see it too down the line. It's like you just get these weird pins that you never see anywhere else on these transitional moves, you know, in sped up fashion. So just, I don't know. It kills the kayfabe a little bit for me. Another fine match. Like we said, JYD has great energy. Sheik was nonstop on offense. I went half a star on this one as well.
Yeah, I gave this, I lost my page here. I gave it a star. And my problem here is, the Iron Sheik is one of the most decorated guys in the company, heel or not. Cameraman, zoom in. And, instead we get him acting like a moron, thinking the match is over,
right,
and JYD wins cheap. I mean, I understand kayfabe. I understand kayfabe very well, and I understand
live,
the letters.
You live
kayfabe. I live the letters from kayfabe. But letters from kayfabe. And the problem here is, why are you making all the – it's one thing to have the heels lose. I get that. But why are they all – look? Why are they all like being a bunch of idiots? Nikolai lost because he's a moron. Sheik loses because he's a moron. I mean, these are two. I mean, losing. Can they just lose? Why do you got to make them look like dopes? I mean, I wasn't liking that tone where all these heels were looking like nitwits. This isn't the Hulk Hogan rock and wrestling cartoon on CBS on Saturday mornings. You know, can't they just lose? It makes JYD kind of look like a chump. I think he looks like a chump in this whole tournament, to be honest with you, but we'll get more on that later on. I mean, oh, I thought we won. I thought the match was over. Come on, Sheik. You're a former world champion, for Christ's sakes.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Everyone forgot what wrestling was for this one night.
I know.
It's like they're all in mind warp. Like, what happened? Oh, I just wake up the next morning like it didn't even exist. You know, it's like wiped out like Men in Black. I don't know. It's just a weird... Yeah, it's like they come in and they completely just forget what they're doing. Like, all of a sudden, you're losing on transitional moves. You're doing stupid things and getting your... You know, it's... I don't know. It's hard to suspend the belief on it. It really hurt me in some of these matches. It's like, and just seeing them get so rushed. Like, how often we've been watching these MSG matches where, like, I would give a left leg if a match ended in 3 minutes, and they never do. But all of a sudden on this night, every match ends in under 5 minutes. You know, when we've seen how many MSG shows where like every match goes at least like 10. It feels like.
Eight of it's crap. You know what I mean?
But yeah, no. But I mean, just from a kayfabe perspective, I'm supposed to believe on this night all of a sudden every match ends early, that Davey Boy almost kills himself 2 minutes into the match, that Nikolai, you know, on this one night gets ambushed. And like I said, you can kind of explain that one away, but it's just, I don't know. Well, it gets even worse. There's a few more to come that are even worse. But anyway, that's my thoughts on the whole thing so far. It's taken me out of the mood of the show so far.
We've also talked longer about this match than the match itself.
Right.
But I mean, maybe it's because it's specific heels that we know are smarter than this. Nikolai, all right, we've kind of realized Nikolai sometimes is a little, you know, a little dopey. But Sheik is supposed to be like the brains of that team, former world champion, you know, legendary guy, tag team champion. And here he's like, oh, I thought I won. I didn't hear a bell, but whatever. Who needs bells? I mean, come on. I don't know. Really bothered me. And in my opinion, I feel it makes baby faces look even dumber. Like, oh, I had to win because, you know, my opponent's a moron. And I think that's what happens with JYD throughout this whole tournament. But in any event. So who will JR, the Junkyard – well, we'll go backstage, and then we'll decide who the Junkyard Dog faces.
That's true. We do that. Gene is in the back with Terry Funk and Jimmy Hart. Funk says he wants a chance at the world champion, Roddy Piper. He says he's going to be champion after tonight, and he wants a shot at the bounty of Paul Orndorff, too. He says the world will see how smart he is, and Jimmy Hart says they have a big surprise planned tonight. Funk spits a chew on the camera, which is pretty nasty. His Hart says the bounty hunter is ready. So he's got a lot on his mind tonight. He wants Paul Orndorff. He wants to challenge Roddy Piper, and he has secret plans in his match with Moondog Spot Scott, who is here in the tournament tonight. And, you know, we've seen some good stuff out of Spotty in 1985. I think you're in the job slot in this card, and you kind of figure Funk will take care of him quickly and move on, right?
Right. Well, we want to clarify based on good old Graham in the history of WWE.com. Guess who Spotty is pinch hitting for?
Let me think. I would have said George Wells, but no, someone else.
The other guy who needs to continuously be pinch hit for, and that is, of course, the missing link.
Do you think we're going to do him and Funk in this opening round?
Well, they had two baby faces. Yeah. Why not have two fucking lunatic heels? I'm sure they wrestled in Texas, so they probably know each other pretty well. So.
I thought you were going to say George Wells, since he's been subbed out of every other show we've watched so far. Huh?
Oh, has he lost it? Does he have a glass eye at this point?
I don't know what's going on. But anyway, so either way, it's cool that they picked him for the, you know, they had other guys that could have probably slotted in here, but Spot gets the call. Weird match. I thought it could have been a fun wild brawl. So Funk comes out. He's all big aspirations, grabs the mic and says he doesn't want to wrestle this match. He says, Spot, you feel the same way? We should just leave the ring and settle for a draw. Spot agrees to the deal. They both leave the ring and start to walk off, but Funk clobbers him from behind and runs back to the ring. However, before he can get there, Spot recovers and yanks Funk down, and they start to brawl. Funk throws Spot into the ring, but he can't get back inside in time. He's got all chaps and everything else going on, and Spot wins the match by count out. Funk beats the shit out of Spot after the bell, while Jimmy Hart throws a tantrum to a big pop. I thought this was pretty funny. I thought it was a smart way to protect Funk. He's lined up for a lot of big things. You get a shock advancement in the tournament, which is always a nice touch. No one expected Spot to move on. The only surprise I thought here was that they didn't move Funk on to face JYD in the next round, since they've been feuding pretty heavily over the last couple of months. You know, that seemed like they were lined up for that. But no, Spot gets the sneaky win. And again, this plays to your theory that the heels are being positioned to look stupid. But I thought this one was actually kind of funny. Like, it, you know, Funk is just trying to get to the next round. He's got big things planned, and then it backfires on him.
Maybe Vince went backstage and was thinking when he was booking this, hey, pal, what do you think about two dogs wrestling? We'll put a bone in the ring. I don't know, something idiotic. But, yeah, I didn't get this at all. I mean, hasn't the feud all year been JYD and Funk? I mean,
yeah, I mean, unless they don't want to.
What is going on here?
I mean, there's a chance they don't want to blow it off on this tournament anyway and have them fight. But it's not like they haven't fought on TV yet. I mean, you know, you could have them fight and almost do something similar. I mean, obviously, JYD wouldn't have fallen for the shtick, but you could have it been a count out. Just have it be a hot brawl and you know, one of them wins by count out. I mean, Funk just beat him on Saturday's main event. So, yeah, I was surprised they didn't go that route. Unless it was just a time thing. But
Well, there's my question. And I can ask. We can ask this again, you know, in a little bit. But what are we wasting time on? I don't get it. What the fuck are we saving time on?
Right.
I mean, do we really need two matches less than 30 seconds?
Yeah.
What the hell are we saving the time?
It's not
like
it's
a
not
match
the last one
play.
Either.
Yeah, it's. I mean, yeah, exactly. And it's not like there's a match later on tonight that's going to be, you know, we're not having a 30-minute Iron Man or whatever. So I'm confused why these first couple of matches were so ridiculously short. You think they're turning Spotty face?
Nah. No, especially now that I know it's a fill-in. I wonder if this would have worked better with a face, but I think the story you have to tell if you want Funk to do the fake draw is it's going to be another heel. Because, I mean, no face is going to fall for that bullshit. You know, like, you need to have a heel in that spot to make it work. Like, Funk saying, hey, we're buddies, let's not fight. I got bigger things going on. I don't need this bullshit. I don't think it was a face turn for Spotty. I think it was just Spot's dumb, and Funk tries to take advantage, and it backfired on him. That's all.
Poor guy. So we have our first three quarterfinal matches are, thus far, Adrian Adonis against the Dynamite Kid, Randy Savage versus Ricky Steamboat, and the Junkyard Dog versus Moondog Spot. Now, would they have? Let me ask you this, JR, before we get to the next match. Do you think if it was Missing Link, they would have done the same gag? Would the gag have worked? I think it would have made sense.
I don't know. Because you would have had Bobby out there. So, like, I don't think Bobby would have been part of that. I don't know. I think it would have been different. They probably would have done something different. Maybe it would have been, like, more of a quick brawl or something. But we don't even know if they were even going to fight each other. I mean, Link was gone. It's not like he no-showed this event at the last minute. I mean, we knew Link's been gone for a while, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
I mean, he was probably scheduled for this night, and they had Spot come in, but it's not like they expected him to be there. So, I'm guessing this wasn't like a drawn-up plan way in advance or anything like that. So,
right,
exactly. I would say it was just a Spot-specific thing.
Yeah, probably. That's what I'm thinking, too. All right, we have one more quarterfinal match to fill, JR. So, what's our next one? Well, do we go backstage?
We do. We're Mean Gene's talking to Don Morocco and Mr. Fuji.
Yes.
Magnificent One says you want to be at the top, you have to beat the best, and that's what he always does. Gene slyly questions his conditioning, but Morocco says he has this one easily. No issue at all. Plenty of conditioning. And that match is, of course, Don Morocco, the Magnificent One, taking on Tito Santana. Really good match here on paper. It's one I was excited about coming in.
That's a rematch from, what would it be, probably late 84? When Tito won the Intercontinental title for the first time. So, a little history here.
Strong match on paper. Probably the strongest on paper coming in the first round. Jesse, of course, as always, chastises Chico. Says he's risking injury in this tournament. It could cost him the gold. Saying he's worried more about the green than his gold tonight. So, already setting it up that if Tito gets hurt, it's a dumb move. For what? Just to win the tournament? He's got bigger things to worry about. They lock him off the bell. Morocco takes over with a knee lift and some clubbing blows before ramming Tito hard into the buckle. Morocco keeps hammering away but whiffs on a clothesline, and Tito gets a cross body block for two. Morocco buries a right hand to the gut and tries a back body drop, but Tito rolls through with a sunset flip for two, followed by a backslide for a pin attempt as well. Morocco begs off, but Tito goes right at him with a flurry and then slings him hard to the corner. Tito kicks him hard in the face and keeps unloading before grabbing hold of the arm and working it over. Morocco fights to his feet and puts Tito on his shoulders before hot-shotting him across the top rope. Jesse and Carrilla credit Fuji for having Morocco prepared as he lays in some knees and elbows for two. Morocco hoists Tito up and hits a power slam for the surprising win. However, as he celebrates, Tito pops up and rolls Morocco into an inside cradle for the win, and we are clarified that Tito's foot was on the ropes during Morocco's pinfall. Jesse bitches about the cheap pin as Carrilla credits Tito for being smart. Again, a fun match, but another sloppy finish. It was confusing. Too short to really matter or go anywhere. I went a star and a half because, you know, it's Tito Morocco, and they have some chemistry there. But the finishes are awful tonight, and this was just another one. This is so confusing. If you don't really see what's going on, the crowd just seemed lost on the whole thing altogether. So, I mean, they seem to be, you know, lost, and so were Gorilla and Jesse. This went 4:13, so the longest so far of the first round.
Yeah.
Just a hair over 4 minutes. But, yeah, I mean, it was fine, but, again, disappointing.
Yes.
And it makes Tito look like a cheater, too. I mean, it doesn't help either guy.
No. And Graham notes here, the crowd drew considerable boos. So I don't know if that meant, A, they were upset that Tito had to cheat, or B, that they wanted Morocco to win.
No, I think it's C. I think they were booing because they thought Morocco won, and then they didn't realize that Tito won, and then it was all very confusing.
Like half of the other decisions in this first round so far.
That's my guess. That's what I think. I think they had no fucking clue what was going on. Like, they were just like, what the fuck?
Well, it gets even worse as this progresses.
I mean, they might have been Morocco fans. Maybe they were watching TNT. I don't know. Maybe they were into him, but it seems confusing.
Yeah. I gave a star and a half. I mean, it was solid. I hate to say, as we've said so far, that I'm kind of bummed that the endings are taking away from what have been, you know, solid in-ring work so far. Nothing offensive, really. The matches that need to be quick have, and the matches that have had a little bit of time to work with have been solid enough. You know, Morocco and Tito, two favorites so far. And I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it a lot. And I'm kind of bummed that the match ended the way it did. I don't know where they're getting these wonky endings from. I don't know who the hell booked this, but it's like every single finish. I guess the problem seems to be, JR, that they're trying to get these guys in. There's too many guys they don't want jobbing.
Right.
So they're coming up with all these weird, you know, eight ball, you know, fucking finishes to try and justify getting these guys.
Right. It's a bad combo of wanting to protect guys and have short matches. So if you're in this position, don't do a fucking tournament. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, if you don't want anyone to lose and you can't spend the time on matches, like, why even have it? Like, it feels so rushed and out of left field. It's, I don't know, just guys losing like they never would. Guys getting protected left and right. It's just no one's losing clean. The whole thing just feels, yeah, it just feels like, I don't know, like, why bother? Like, why do it? Why even do it if this is what it's going to be?
Yeah, I mean, and why are you – I'm still confused as to why they're rushing. What's the rush? I mean, you know, they've done what? One, two – what have we done? Seven matches in what? Half an hour? Yeah. Maybe a little longer, maybe 35 minutes? I mean, I don't get it. I don't get what the rush is. But, well, our Intercontinental Champion, JR, needs an opponent, and this match, yeah. No, this might be the number two best first-round matchup of the – Of the eight, and that is, well, do we go backstage?
We do. Mean Gene visiting with Bobby Heenan. Gene notes that no Heenan family members are in the tournament, but Bobby says they're always watching and scouting what's going on here in the WWF, and he's also here to see if anyone can take out Paul Orndorff so he can give them the $50,000 bounty. Did you find it weird that there were no Heenan family members in the tournament?
Very much so. I don't know where they would have fit. You could have put a heel with the Funk. I mean, because they're all greedy. So maybe they do something like where Jimmy, you know, let's put it this way. Why not do this? If you could do the same thing, you know, Jimmy Hart, because Bobby always throws digs at the other heel managers. They always kind of throw digs at each other, you know, subtle ones. So why not have like Stud face Funk? And Funk's like, I ain't fucking wrestling him.
Right.
So you have, you know, Bobby and Jimmy sit together and go, look, why don't we, you know, work out a thing, checkbooks come out, Halliburton's, whatever, Halliburton, baby. And, you know, work out something, and then suddenly Funk loses his mind and just jumps John Studd. And,
no, or you have it where they were both planning the same thing and realize at the same time. They're both planning to double cross each other, you know?
Right. Something like that. Yeah, you could have stuck a Heenan family member. I am no Bundy. You would have figured if Bundy was slated for whatever he was slated for, you'd have figured Bundy had been somewhere in the show. Yeah. No, it is a little odd there's no Heenan members. I guess we can
talk about this here because we're almost at the end of the first round. Do you think they would have been better served to do an eight-man tournament and have a few other matches underneath, like put a Bundy over or Bundy and Stud over? Maybe have Andre out there somewhere. I mean, he's another guy that's not around on this night.
I mean, I would have had maybe a take out the Bulldogs out of this and have a, you know, have a Bulldogs Dream Team title match.
Right. Yeah, kind of, they're not here either. Valentine or Beefcake. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are on the card, which shows you how loaded the roster was. I mean, because there's not a lot of scrubs in this tournament. I mean, it's not like besides Spot, like there's no, it's not a, you know, proliferation of bums. So,
no.
I mean, it shows you how deep the roster was that they had this many guys. But I think if you do an eight-man tournament, you have less matches you got to work through.
Now, well, I'm on our good friend Graham at historywwe.com. There was another show going on this evening.
Oh, okay.
They weren't far away though. They were at a place, JR, that you and I have, as we're doing our Vintage Vault refreshes, have seen often, and that is the Field House in Struthers, Ohio.
No, oh, jeez.
At Youngstown State. He only has five matches here, but this is what he's got. SD Jones fought. Oh my God! You ready for this? SD Jones fought Barry O to a 20-minute draw.
I can
guarantee
you. Imagine
us having to do that.
These 2,500 people never came back to another show.
Bret Hart pinned Scott McGee in 14:09. Now, that might not have been a bad match. Jim Neidhart pinned future Ohio State guard Jimmy Jackson.
Right. Well, he isn't in Ohio. Yeah, I mean.
There you go. Mike Rotundo, happened there. And Sam Martino, bubble butt, defeated Johnny V and the Dream Team in 14:12. When Bubble Butt there pinned Johnny V. Mm-hmm. And then the main event, oh, that's why a Heenan family member. Because Hillbilly Jim defeated Bing Crosby John Studd. Big John Studd by DQ at 14:37. So that was on the same night as this. So there is no Studd, no Dream Team. Your other champions are here, so maybe that's why. But would you have thought that? Why would you have booked another?
Right. Why bother?
I know a lot of people listening to these wonderful shows are thinking, guys, this is 1985, mm-hmm. not 2017. I understand that. But it is very hard to, you know, you got to think there's some common sense here that, hey, you know, it's not like they were at the Garden. I mean, they were at some little, you know, shithole in Struthers, Ohio. It's not like they were at the Forum or the Garden or
they
whatever.
They could have just canceled that show.
If it was
already scheduled. And you booked the classic after, and you're like, oh, you know, like they couldn't just bag that show. It was only 2,500 people. Just reschedule it for a month later and have everyone come to this show. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I just think a lot could have been done. We could talk about maybe what we would have done later. But I think an eight-man tournament with a couple of other matches makes this card feel a little bit better. Like,
yeah.
We're rushing through so much, and we're trying to get everyone in, and, you know, we're making concessions on quick matches and draws when you could have shaved off a few matches, done eight men, have a tag title match, Maybe you do an IC title match, anything. You know, take Tito out of the tournament. And there's a few things you could have done to tighten this up.
Now, the next day, I mean, we won't get into the cards, but the next day, they split the rosters up. One half goes a little bit east to the old igloo in Pittsburgh. And then the other half, JR, goes far east. Mm-hmm. Not the far east, but goes right into Lakeside Arena there, otherwise known as the Providence Civic Center. So they were in your backyard the next day.
Pretty cool main event in Pittsburgh, too, that next night. Bruno and David defeated Roddy Piper and Bob Orton.
Bruno pinned Orton.
Of course, that was in Pittsburgh, so the San Martino's home. So, but, I mean, pretty cool match, though.
Oh, absolutely. And looks like some decent matches in your house, too. Any event, the whole point of this discussion is there was no need for that Struthers, Ohio show. They might as well just canceled it, give them a discount, have a show in fucking January or something, and have all hands. If this show is that big a deal, all hands should be on deck. I just, you know what I'm saying? It's, I don't know. Anyway, we have one more match, JR, to conclude the first round. Who will Tito Santana face in the next round? And it's another pretty solid one.
It is, sir. So we do go backstage. Oh, no, we already talked about that. We're backstage for Bobby.
Yes.
And we now do have that bounty on the line as Bob Orton takes on Paul Orndorff to close out the first round. Solid final first round match. Extra intrigue due to the bounty plus their history together. Of course, former teammates back at WrestleMania. Good heat on Orton and a big pop for Orndorff as we get some trading of position and control to open up as Orndorff grabs the arm and starts to work on the cast. Orndorff hits an atomic drop that sends Orton into the post and then gets right back to the arm. Orton counters a charge into a side headlock, but Orndorff works free and grabs a wrist lock before punishing the arm some more, including a really nice snap chicken wing using his feet. Orndorff eats a knee on a charge, giving Orton an opening to get to work, focusing on the neck. Orton and Orndorff hits Orndorff with a hot shot and then slugs away in the corner. Orton kicks away and grabs a chin lock as Gorilla ponders Orton's bodyguard salary, once again, as Jesse thinks Piper is a generous man. Orton turns into a head scissors, but Orndorff powers up and unleashes a hot flurry of right hands and kicks before spiking Orton to the mat. Orton bails to the floor, but Paul comes right after him and hammers away. Orton ends up on the ring apron and smashes Orndorff in the head with a cast to draw the DQ. Orndorff hammers away after the bell, driving Orton to the back. This is a lot of fun. The crowd was really hot into it the whole time. Probably just excited they actually had a real match for once.
I know.
And another match that deserved more time, but good while it lasted. And I didn't mind the finish here this time. It's hurt only by the fact that we've had so many shit finishes, up to this point. But I thought it was pretty good because, Orton looked to be in trouble. And he says, fuck it, I'm not going to win anyway. Let me take a shot at the bounty. So he just slugs him with the cast and tries to hurt him. So, to me, that actually made sense. It's hurt by the other finishes we've seen tonight. But as a standalone in a vacuum, I thought it was really smart. I went 2 stars on this. My favorite match of the first round by far.
Yes, I also went 2 stars. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. Orndorff is coming to his own a little bit. I think he's been fine. I think he's gotten some good babyface pops, and I think he could have been a babyface for a good long period of time. Orton's just a solid worker. You're never going to go wrong with that. This was a fine spot. For once, we had a wonky ending that actually made sense. We did a couple times at the Garden where Orton has been caught using the cast. And that's fine. No problem with that. Crowd seemed into it. And I kind of dig, when we get to the quarterfinal match in a minute, I kind of dig the dynamic Jesse starts to stir during that match. But this was solid. It was solid enough. I gave it 2 stars as well. I thought it was a good, well-worked first-round match that maybe we wish we had seen maybe in a few of the other matches in the first round. So here's our quarterfinals. It is the Dynamite Kid taking on Adrian Adonis, the Macho Man Randy Savage against Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Junkyard Dog and Moondog Spotty, and Tito Santana and Paul Orndorff. How about that? Do we go backstage? Obviously, I'm sure Vince wants to give us a bracket update while Alfred is, whispering disgusting nothings in what's-her-name's ear.
He is. He's back in the tracker room. Alfred is groping Susan at this point. I mean, just really, his hands are all over her. They run through the first round results and set up round two, which will now have 15-minute time limits. Terry Funk comes in just yelling about being robbed by an arrogant referee in the WWF. He says he could beat Hogan, he could beat Junkyard Dog, he could beat Paul Orndorff, and should be in the ring right now. He calls Vince a big-eyed jerk, a fool, and an idiot. Really funny. Do you think Susan is someone like Alfred knew? Like who the hell would just hire, sign up for this gig and let this old fucking English guy just grope them all on pay-per-view?
Yeah, I know. It's very, very bizarre. Very bizarre. And I mean, Alfred kind of has his niche, you know, character thing here, but it's just bizarre. When Mean Gene does it, you giggle because you're like, oh, dirty old man. But when Alfred does it, it almost seems dirty. But, you know. All right, so we dive into the quarterfinals, and our first quarterfinal is a very solid matchup, JR, as we mentioned earlier, between a guy that you wouldn't think it could hang with a smaller, faster worker and a guy who is a smaller, faster worker.
Indeed, and that is the Dynamite Kid taking on Adrian Adonis. A tremendous matchup here, like we said, to open round two. We open it up with a lockup, and Adonis strikes first on a shoulder block. Dynamite comes right back with arm drags and send Adonis to the floor. Jesse notes that Dynamite hasn't been tested at all tonight until now. Well, I mean, it's only been one match. Adonis comes back in and lays in some elbows to the head and then slings Dynamite to the top buckle. Jesse takes a quick leave, says he has to go prep the Macho Man. Gorilla says he's not supposed to leave here. So again, more with this Jesse and Savage stuff. Adonis stays in control, takes over the Kid with a suplex for two, and then goes to a reverse chin lock. Adonis releases the hold and starts to work the leg with sit-outs and knee drops. Dynamite avoids a charge and gets a sunset flip for two, but Adonis pops up and slugs Dynamite down. Adonis tries for a bulldog, but Dynamite pushes him into the corner to block it. Dynamite drops a knee and follows with a clothesline and a knee drop off the middle buckle for two. Dynamite's a snap suplex and drops a headbutt, but Jimmy Hart gets on the apron and starts jawing at Dynamite. That allows Adonis to roll him up for two. Dynamite pops up and drop kicks Adonis hard into Hart and covers for the surprise win. Dynamite limps off as Adrian throws a tantrum in the ring. Really fun match. Great pace, hard hitting, focused offense by both. I liked how Hart backfired this time because he's usually successful in helping Adrian and his guys, but it cost him. Dynamite's unlikely run continues into round three. I like how we have an underdog here, Scott, too. I think it's a nice touch. Mm-hmm. I went two stars. A really, really fun match. You know, I've become a huge Adonis fan through watching this, and Dynamite's great, and these two had a great match. I'd love to see them in MSG with 12 minutes to really unload, but alas, we have to, you know, just enjoy what we had here tonight, and this one went, what, 5:23? But nice push for Dynamite, too, really building him up nicely.
Yep. I gave it slightly less. I gave it a star and a half. I was hoping for a little more, you know, because we're pretty early into this tournament. And you know they're not going to waste valuable tournament time or, you know, for some reason later on. So I was expecting a little more. But I kind of like Dynamite as the – I mean, they must have flipped a coin. They must have flipped a coin backstage as to which Bulldog was going to get the Jesus push in this tournament, which one was going to get hosed. I can't see Dynamite Kid taking a crotch shot. He's not as stupid as David Boy is. But,
I mean, I think maybe they thought Dynamite was – I don't know, more equipped for what they were trying to do to make a, you know, a little bit better conditioning to make a run here.
Right. And he's also, you know, he's obviously smaller than Davey Boy. So he could, you know, he comes off as an underdog type of guy. So, I mean, the match was fine. I mean, I wish Adonis had won, but that would have made no sense in the next round. And, you know, typical shenanigans for Adonis. But still, though, one of the best workers in the company, one of the best characters. So sad to see him lose, but he did. So Dynamite Kid moves on to the semifinals. And he'll take on the winner of the next match. But we go back to the podium or the platform. What do we got?
Yeah, we got a Gene. He's backstage with Jesse. He talks about how he's helping Savage prepare for Steamboat. Yeah. He says, Macho Man is ready, and the body's behind him, but he will stay an unbiased announcer during the match. Gene says Jesse has a track record to be prejudiced during matches, but that offends Jesse as he heads back out to the booth. So continuing this. So, Scott, I think you're wrong. You know, you said earlier you thought it was Jesse just going out on his own. I think it's clearly beyond that. I mean, they're doing interviews on the backstage about it. So they obviously had something, you know, I don't know if they thought Jesse would help legitimize him or there was going to be something more to it, but it's clearly going beyond Jesse just being Jesse in the booth. I mean, why would they let Jesse book himself for an interview backstage in a pay-per-view to talk about it? So there's obviously something there. There's something cooking.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. Yeah, maybe there was something in the works there. I don't know why, but maybe Vince didn't have faith in Savage early. Maybe he thought... I mean, I don't want to say backpedaling, but maybe he thought the whole Elizabeth as manager thing was not working. Maybe he needed to have another – not that Savage could speak on his own because, I mean, it's fucking Savage. But maybe they wanted a spokesperson, somebody that will talk for somebody. I don't know. That makes no sense. I mean
– I think – I'm wondering if Jesse was starting to test the waters to maybe get back in the ring. I mean, we saw it on that house show in was it Pittsburgh or Providence? One of them in Pittsburgh. He fights Hogan for the title the next night. And he's on the MSG Pittsburgh show in November. You know, if you look at the card, he's fighting Tito. He's fighting Hogan. So he's pretty active here toward the end of the year. You know, so maybe it wasn't the plan. Maybe he was going to see if he could start wrestling again and stay healthy. And maybe Maybe him and Savage will start teaming up a little bit more. So there must have been something behind it. Because, you know, in 1985 at this time, they didn't do shit and just to do it. Like, they usually had a plan behind what they were doing. Like, anything they talk about on commentary or in an interview, and they had to be that way because so much stuff was intertwining. It's not like today where there were live shows and that was it. Like, they had all these house shows all around the country. They had, you know, TV specified for every market. They had syndicated shows. They had live shows. You know, they had all this stuff that they had to track. They were filming shit way in advance. They had stuff that they had to really keep track of and plan. So when stuff like this happened, it usually wasn't by mistake. You know, like, there were usually plans behind it. So I think there's something to it. I think they were planning a Jesse Savage union, whether it was a full-on tag team or just them being aligned. You know, maybe that was going to be part of Hogan. You know, Savage has been calling out Hogan, and we see Jesse fighting with him. So maybe we'll see it. Maybe we just haven't seen it yet. Maybe there's more to come. So we could be projecting. But I think there's more to it than meets the eye.
Yeah, there must be. Maybe Vince is kind of backpedaling on this hot valet who doesn't speak much, and maybe he has – I don't know. I can't think Vince had no faith in Savage as his own spokesperson. He needed Jesse, but
– I don't think so. The way they've been presenting Savage like a superstar, I don't think they had any doubts. I think maybe they just wanted to pair them up. Maybe it's something to do with the Hogan feud. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
We'll see how it plays out. Speaking of Savage, let's go to our second quarterfinal match of the evening, which pits the Macho Man taking on the Dragon, Ricky Steamboat Jr.
It does. Steamboat's in the ring. Savage again gets his full entrance, Scott. So not even Ricky Steamboat is, you know, is above this.
Yeah.
He gets the in-the-ring treatment. Savage gets the full boat. Fantastic match on paper. Again, I mean, this tournament is littered with, like, potential dream matches that just don't get the time to ever really get there. I mean,
exactly.
This is a who's who is, you know, for someone like me that started watching wrestling in 1990, there's so many matches on this show that I would have been like, oh, I wonder if these guys ever fought. Holy shit, there's a pay-per-view with all of these matches on it? You know, Savage Steamboat and, you know, whatever. You know, like, there's so many possibilities here. So we'll talk about more as we go. Savage uses Liz as a shield and then throws her aside and hammers Steamboat from behind. Steamboat makes a quick comeback and drives Savage to the floor to regroup and disrobe. Savage comes back in and fires off some punches but walks into a boot from Steamboat, who then sends Savage over the top of the head scissors. Steamboat heads out and hammers away on the floor before rattling Savage with a delayed atomic drop. Steamer shoves Savage back inside and levels him with a chop. Savage ducks a punch and hits a back suplex to finally slow Steamboat down. Jesse returns to the booth as Savage heads up top, but Steamboat pops up and punches Savage on his way down. Steamboat buries the knee lift and drops some fists to send Savage to the edge of the apron. Steamboat suplexes Savage back inside and heads up top, and it's a high cross body for two. Gorilla calls out Steamboat for not hooking the leg on that one. Steamboat unleashes some thrusts until Savage ends up on the apron again. Savage goes into his tights, and as Steamboat tries to back suplex him in, Savage punches him repeatedly with a foreign object and falls on top for the win. Another short glimpse of what could be a classic. Savage, though, clearly the focus as a superstar. Presentation and commentary, they clearly have big plans for him. Steamboat looks great as always. Good stuff. Savage cheats his way to round three, and Jesse, as always, denies the trickery during the replay. I went 2 stars on this, but again, just a morsel of what could be between these two guys. And I don't mind the finish here. I don't mind the cheating because Steamboat is very capable of beating him. Savage's hook is that he'll do anything to advance on this tournament. We saw him cheat in round one, and he cheats again in round two. So I was perfectly fine with how this one went.
Yeah, I mean, I gave it 2.5. I love this match. I just love the chemistry between these two. They know how to dance. The cheating's fine. Everything about this match was fine. I think you knew Steamboat wasn't going to probably win it. There was, you know, some heavier baby faces down the line here. And you weren't going to have Savage job out.
Right.
So I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. But I thought it was a lot of fun. And like you said, you just get that hint that if you give these guys 15 minutes, they could paint a Picasso if you just gave them the time. You know, if you can give them the time, and obviously for some reason we can't. I don't know. Is the meter running on the shadow? I mean, what fucking deal is here? But this was fine. It was fantastic. I really liked it a lot, and probably because I knew what these two could really do together. And I tell you, I think there have been some house show matches between these two already that have been out of this world. I think there was one. Might have been Poughkeepsie. Either Poughkeepsie or White Plains, there was a house show in like August or September that they tore the house down, I believe. So you knew that they could do it. But again, they only had 5 minutes because, you know,
as Paul Mariette once sang, ooh, do it.
Ooh, do it. And, you know, maybe, you know, Alfred was in the back of the shadow, you know, tying up what's her face.
Right.
So we have the Dynamite Kid and the Macho Man in the semifinals. How about that, JR? That's actually pretty,
another dream.
Pretty
That's
juicy.
What I'm saying. All these matches, like, holy shit. No. One card.
Oh, we go backstage.
We do. Gene is with Moondog Spot, who just mumbles and rubs his head and pats his bone. Gene tries his best, but gets nothing from him. So
surprised he didn't say the bone stunk.
All right.
We didn't fucking hear that for 9 months.
Patting that bone.
Patting that bone. And that brings us to the Battle of the Dogs. The one from the junkyard against the one from parts unknown.
Right.
or the moon. Yes. Whatever. So.
Yes, the Battle of the Dogs is up next. So that is JYD and Spot. And we've had a good run of quality here, Scott. That's probably going to end. Big pop again for JYD. Spot starts hot with some knee drops, but JYD dodges him and starts to unleash him headbutts. But Scott, there's no referee in the ring for some reason. JYD smashes Spot with a headbutt, covers, and just counts his own pin. Like, this is like WCF 1995. Just got in his counter on pinfalls. The bell
you
rings.
Guys done yet?
And the bell fucking rings, and he leaves. And Gorilla's like, what's going on? And then he says, oh, the ringside judge gave us the official nod. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, they were completely unprepared for this night. This makes no sense on any level. There's no. How could there be no referee? Like, no one could get down there to count it? Was this planned this way? Like, who the fuck plans this? Why not just have JYD come in, lay him out, and pin him? It's fucking Spot. Why did you have to do this tomfoolery with no referee? It looks so stupid. What fucking ringside judge? When there was never a ringside judge. Like, he's never been called out. Ringside judge. And even if it's been hinted at, they never just decided matches. Oh, yeah, he had him pinned. Like, when is that ever a thing? Like, all the times a ref is knocked out?
Maybe Samuel the Giant was supposed to trip the rope over and he missed his cue.
Fucking God. It's, like, so stupid. What are you doing? Like, it just makes no sense. You're just completely illegitimizing this whole thing. Like you said, Junkyard Dog looks ridiculous in this thing. I mean, Savage is killing himself. And you go, JYD has, you know, these two useless matches, and this one's not even a match. It just makes no sense. The whole thing makes no sense.
It does. Just two dumb endings. How do you not have a referee? What is this, TNA? I mean, when did Vince ever look so foolish at this point? I mean, no ref, and, you know, JYD's doing his own thing. I mean, what the hell's going on here? Guys getting crotched, and they can't wrestle. It just, you know,
overthought. They way overthought this thing and overbooked it. It's like, I don't know. I mean, unless a ref legitimately missed his spot, and we know they're running short on time, God forbid. So maybe they just feel like, just do it. Like, I don't know. I have no clue what
the fuck
happened.
Did Dick Kroll get fired? Angry ref? Did he get fired?
Right.
Do they finally job out, what's his name, Gil Roman? Did he finally get himself fired?
Very confusing. It's all very confusing.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on here. But JYD's in, because he has to be in.
Right.
How he got there, who the hell knows or cares, but... and finally, our final quarterfinal match, and this, JR, this is juicy right here.
Yes.
We go backstage, of course. I'm assuming me and Gene talking to someone? Or are we on the platform?
No, Gene is visiting with Bobby Heenan. They talk about Tito Santana maybe cashing in on that bounty. Bobby again says he's scouting talent, and they also talk about Hogan's match with Roddy Piper. Bobby says he thinks Hogan is tired from his hectic schedule and ripe for the picking, so... We'll see there. And Tito Santana battling Paul Orndorff. Again, another cool match on paper to close out round two. And I'm glad they didn't hold back on the face-face, heel-heel stuff. Like, I'm glad that at least they rolled with that. Jesse is curious if Tito will go after the bounty halfway through when Orton's not looking for it. A taco salesman from Tijuana that can't be bought, says Jesse. So Gorilla takes offense to that. He's not from Tijuana. We open with a handshake, and then Tito works a side headlock as Jesse notes that Tito now has his hamstring taped up, and that wasn't the case earlier, and that gives him more fuel to say it's stupid that he entered this tournament and now he got hurt. Orndorff powers out of the hold into a top wrist lock and drives Tito to the mat, but Tito twists into a head scissors. Orndorff again fights free and turns into a hammerlock that Tito turns into one of his own. And then they break loose and reset. Jesse says the volcano is getting ready to erupt as they lock up yet again. Tito hooks a side headlock, but Orndorff spins it into atomic drop right into that injured thigh. Tito rolls around in pain as Orndorff sits back and lets the ref check him, to which Jesse rips him. Tito limps around as Orndorff circles and takes him down with a single leg takedown into a toe hold. Orndorff hammers away at the leg and locks in a leg lace. Tito fights to his feet, but Orndorff clobbers him on the floor to a break. Orndorff follows him out, and they start to brawl, clawing at each other and punching away until they both get countered out and eliminated. Once they realize what happened, they back off and cool down. Fine enough match, a little disappointing in the ending, again, due to the format. Jesse was the highlight here, pushing the volcano erupting, and then in the end it did, and it cost both guys. Sad to see both get eliminated, but it makes the tourney feel a little bit real. They lost their minds, lost their cool and fought to the draw. Tito's leg getting worked over was the highlight of this match. I went star and a half.
Yeah, I went, what did I go? I went, where am I here? I went 2 stars. This match was great. And Jesse, you know, you have the one pure baby face, and then you got the baby face who, you know, kind of has a dark side. Funny saying that with Orndorff. But, and sure enough, Jesse's like, he's going to snap. He's going to snap. You know he's going to snap. The old Paul Orndorff. And it's funny how that's being referenced now when he's only been a baby face, 6 months? And already Jesse's like, he's going to snap. There's only one Paul Orndorff that I know. And meanwhile, Bobby's saying that Tito, for all of his goody-goody, you know, a briefcase full of cash never hurt anybody. I kind of dug all of that innuendo as we were getting into this match and the match was going. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. 8:03, your highlight of the night. So I guess the other matches had to get cut down right. So we could have 8 minutes for this. And it was really good. They went back and forth. I thought they had good chemistry. There's a great match these two have when Orndorff's a straight up heel. Mm-hmm. It's on one of the best of the WWF. So it used to be when the old school Coliseum video opened, the da 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 da, and they have all the clips of matches. There is a Tito Orndorff match on it that I remember being very, very good. It's on one of the best of the WWFs. This isn't it, but still, it's very good. So they get counted out. So guess who gets a clear sailing to the final? Fucking Junkyard Dog.
Right.
What is going on here? The baby face gets the easy ride and the fucking heels kind of work their asses off?
Yeah,
what is going on here tonight?
The booking is such a mess on the show. I mean, really bad. It's really bad.
What is going on here? JYD, the fat fucking pork rind eater, cruising through these rounds. And fucking Savage, cheating he is, but he's working his ass off.
Right.
He's had to work with two legit guys. Well, I guess Paduski's kind of legit. And then fucking Steamboat. Now he's got to face fucking Dynamite Kid. Yeah. What is it? What
it's
is going
booking.
On here?
It's really odd booking.
So bizarre. Why? God. Anyway, so far, I mean, matchup-wise, we seem to be, you know, eh. But, I mean, the decisions and the actual execution of stuff is just so out of left field. And not in a good way. I mean, it's just bizarre. I mean, I don't know. It's just bizarre. How bizarre. When we come back, we do have one semifinal, and of course our championship, and JR, the World Wrestling Federation title is on the line. Number one face, number one heel. But first, we'll see if Alfred has any words. Unless he's not talking. Because
his mouth's full.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across 2 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of the Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceOfNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceOfNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceOfNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
Nation, we are back taking a look at the Wrestling Classic, pay-per-view late in 1985. Here, as we're close to wrapping up the year, Scott. Mm-hmm. It's been a fun trek so far. We'll see how things are shaping up in the final month or so. And, you know, it is Lent, and, you know, of course, you're a holy roller up there in the Knights of Columbus. Big dog. It's your yard. And, you know, of course, that is a time of year known as Lent, Scott. A lot of us giving up chocolate or ham or, you know, whatever else you want to give up.
Ham!
Well, yeah, set yourself up for a big Easter meal. But a lot of vices we're giving up, of course, and yes. That ties into the music we hear underneath us right now, and that is the number one song in the nation this week, Miami Vice theme by Van Hammer. Is that who it was by?
Jan Hammer.
No, Jan Hammer.
No, okay. Van Hammer.
By Van Hammer.
Yes, and Man Mountain Rock played backup on it. no, Jan Hammer, not Van Hammer.
Oh, okay. But that is the number one song, the Miami Vice theme song.
Yes, it is. Yep. All right. Now, this pay-per-view, in case no one remembered what day of the week this pay-per-view was actually on a Thursday, because November 9th, which was the week that this the day that this most recent Billboard Top 100 came out, was on Saturday. So this pay-per-view was on a Thursday, in case anybody never knew that. And yes, Jan Hammer's Miami Vice theme was your number one song. A lot of the songs in this top 10, very familiar. Number two, a little part-time lover, Stevie, who last week – and remember, JR, we're actually – for the first time since we've been doing the refreshes, our pop culture reports are actually 1 week apart. Mm-hmm. This is a week later from the Saturday Night's main event. So last week's number one, which was Part-Time Lover by Stevie Wonder, dropped to two. Head Over Heels by Tears for Fears, just for you, Kelly, up a spot from four to three. You Belong to the City by Glenn Frey went up two to four. Moving up two spots to number five, We Built This City by Starship. Our Girl Whitney dropped three spots to six, Saving All My Love for You. At number seven, moving up eight spots from 15, a little duet action, Phil Collins and Marilyn Martin, not Marilyn Manson, the song Separate Lives from the movie White Nights, which was a...
about message board.
I think it was like a... Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yes. It was some kind of espionage movie. We had Mikhail Baryshnikov and... who's the black guy that was the dancer? Gregory Hines.
I think we talked about this already. I feel like I made that same exact joke. It feels very familiar to me.
I know.
Right down to Mikhail Baryshnikov.
At number eight, little Aha with Take On Me. Number nine was Be Near Me by ABC. And moving up eight spots from 18 to 10, our first foray into the Thompson Twins, who ended up being a pretty big act in the 80s. Their song Lay Your Hands On Me
was number 10. Now.
My Heart, which I think came out a little bit, I think a couple years before this. So this song, Lay Your Hands On Me, is number 10. So there's your Billboard Top 10 for the week of November 9th, 2 days later, 1985. All right, let us now go to the movie theater, JR, as the next day, the 8th, that Friday. We had five new movies out. Nothing as stellar as we had last week, but a few things. Five movies came out. And by the way, JR, for the first time, I believe we have our first foreign film. I mean, like, legit foreign film.
Are you sure? We've had a bunch. Didn't we just have one last week that was, like, super
Well, we had movies that were shot overseas.
No, I thought last week we had, like, a legit foreign film.
Did we really? Was it one? Oh, it was an Italian movie. All right, yeah, that was an Italian movie. That's right. Yeah. All right, this one actually has, like, a, I mean, strange. All right, at number
five. Good day, sir.
Good day, sir. At number five, it made $29,426, or lira, or whatever it is.
Lira.
It is a drama called...
Yes, La Ciccio.
La Ciccio. La Historia Oficial. So the movie's called The Official History. Technically, I don't know. So,
let's see here. The Official History.
Yeah, good luck finding it.
No, I found it. Redirect. Official History. It's actually Spanish, Scott.
Yes, it is.
1985 Argentine drama historical film by Luis Puenzo. Let's see if we get the cast. Hector Alterio, Norma Alejandro, Chunchuna Villafane.
Chunchuna? Is that Chunchuna. His name? Nice.
It's a female, I believe. Plays Anna. Hugo Arana, Guillermo Battaglia, Sheila Ruiz, Patricio Cachetes, Maria Revisa, Roberto, Daniel Lago, Pablo Rago.
You trying to get a job on Lucha Underground?
Jorge Pacharlia.
All right. Is there a plot here, or we just
it's set in Argentina in the 1980s? Venenas in the last years of the country's last military dictatorship, during a campaign of the state-sponsored terrorism, produced thousands of killings and torture of accused political leftists. Sounds like some of you guys today. In instance alike, were buried in unmarked graves or became desperaciados.
Thought you were gonna say. I think that plot would have been better if it was. And El Guiante banged all of these hooas in his Argentine bodega or whatever.
My queen size double super queen. What was that? I don't remember.
Extra queen. Extra queen size men. Footy men suit. All right. At number four, this made $1,675,689. It was a documentary. Oh, riveting. Called Bring On the Night. Starts Steve Piscatello in his all beige outfit.
Bring on the white knight. 1986 live album by Sting. No, that's not it. Let's see here. The movie, Bring on the Night. It's a documentary film directed by Michael Ted, focusing on a jazz-inspired project, a band led by the British musician Sting, during the early stages of his solo career. Some of the songs, which are concert rehearsals, are featured in the film, appeared on his debut solo album, Dream of Blue Turtles. Each musician of the band throughout the course of the film is interviewed, won a Grammy Award for Best Music Video Long Form at the 87 Grammys. Released on DVD in 05.
Very nice.
There you go.
As Sting has broken on and had a pretty good career, but his best album's not for me.
They should
have
called it The Man Called Sting. That would have been a better name for the film.
The what?
The Man Called Sting.
Oh, yes. All right, at number three, this made $7,200,000.
Our buddy Gary Michael Capetta do the narration for the documentary.
Right.
This is Sting.
It's Sting. At number three, making $7.2 million. It is a comedy, JR. It is called Transylvania 65,000. Type 6-5000.
Okay, I got it right here.
Okay.
I thought it was gonna be about the movie, the video game, but then I realized that was Castlevania. Transylvania 65,000, a 1985 American Yugoslav horror comedy film about two tabloid reporters who travel to modern-day Transylvania to uncover the truth behind Frankenstein sightings. Along the way, they encounter other horror movie staples, such as a mummy, a werewolf, and a vampire, each with a twist. Starring, do you know who?
Matthew Modine. No, I don't know.
Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, okay.
Joseph Bologna, Ed Begley Jr., Carol Kane, Jeffrey Jones, John Biner, Gina Davis as Odette, Michael Richards as Faye Hosts, Donald Gibb as the Wolfman.
Donald Gibb, Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds, otherwise known as Braun Strowman.
I thought that was one of the Bee Gees. That's not one of them.
Yes, he's one of their cousins. He's one of their backwater cousins.
Norman Fell, Teresa Gonzel, Rudy DeLuca, Inge Appelette, and Bozidar Samidlicic. Michael Richards, though, is a Turnus Fejos.
What? It sounds like you just took a bunch of consonants and phonetically just said them out loud. Bozidar
Samidlicic.
Norman Fell, by the way, in case you don't know who he is, Mr. Roper on Three's Company, Norman Fell.
So a pretty decent little cast here.
Actually, I like the way he said Joseph. I like the way he kind of made it very European. Joseph Bologna.
So this is actually a remake from a 1963 film.
Oh, okay.
That starred, it was actually animation. It was an animated film. It was Bunny, part of the Bugs Bunny series.
Yeah,
maybe
really?
It was a remake then. This,
from Bugs Bunny to Joseph Bologna. All right.
So. Okay. So it was an animated short. Sorry, Bugs Bunny. They used the same name.
Interesting. At number two, it made $8,630,068. It is a drama that was called That Was Then, This Is Now. A drama with Joseph Bologna.
Let's see. A film based on S.E. Hinton's novel. It's a sequel to The Outsider, Scott. Directed by Christopher
Kane.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know that. Huh.
Craig Schaefer, Emilio Estevez makes a return here. He's the only link to the society is the attachment he feels to his older brother figure. When Byron Douglas starts spending time with a new girlfriend, Mark begins to feel even more alienated and gets involved with drugs and the police. Kim Delaney, Larry B. Scott, Barbara Babcock, Frank Howard, Morgan Freeman, Francis X. McCarthy, Diane Dorsey, Ramon Estevez, also known as Ramon Sheen, Dan Lyon, and Sharon Thomas as the doctor.
So this is the sequel.
I'm a Dr. G character in this one.
Fucking, this is the sequel to The Outsiders, yet nobody's in it except Emilio. Even Tom Cruise didn't come back. Fucking Steve Randall. Interesting. All right, and the number one movie that came out that weekend, it made $9,023,199. It was a thriller suspense film called Target. Not the store.
All right, hang on. Let's put film in parentheses here to get this one. A lot of targets. All right. There's a film named Target in 1952, 1979, 1985, 1995, 2004, 2011, 2014. A lot of films named Target. So let's go to 85. Film starring Gene Hackman.
I think I know this movie.
Gene Hackman, Matt Dillon. I must have been pretty young. Gail Hunnicutt, Joseph Sumner, Guy Boyd. There's always a Guy around. Victoria Fyodorova, Herbert Berghoff, Ilona Grubel, James Selby, Ray Fry, Tomas Nzviza, Jean-Paul Dubois, Robert Grand, Veronica Guillard, Charlotte
Did
Bailey.
Did your father saying that last name?
Guillard. Randy Moore, Jacques Mignot, and Robert Liensol.
Very impressed. You really had to go all out, all over the world tonight.
Right. In Dallas, Walter Lloyd runs a lumber business. After checking out at the office, Walter stops by a local racetrack where his college-age son Chris works repairing stock cars. Reminds Chris of his mother's departure for Europe. Chris meets him back at the house to send her off. Though the relationship is slightly strained, the family is tightly woven and carry on amicably, although an undying tension between father and son is hinted at. Before she leaves, the mother says, "Break the root of the kid while I'm gone." Wife is split from her tour group while away, and then goes on from there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there you go. So, I mean, nothing ridiculous. But that's too bad. Some made some money this past weekend. There, our next Pop Culture Report, JR, I think we'll be close to Thanksgiving weekend, so we might have some decent heavyweights in terms of movies in our next report, because I think we're close to Thanksgiving for that show. All right. Time now to go from the movie theater to the gridiron, and you, my friend, are about to...
I believe I'm about to go ahead and take the field, sir.
Take the field. Yes, you will. It is week 10. Sally Field. Week 10 of the 1985 NFL season. You did pretty good last week, right? Didn't you go 10 and three, dog?
Yeah, I think I only got maybe three wrong, two or three. I've been on a roll the last 2 weeks. I've been pretty good.
Yep, I got some interesting games here, so...
Let's do it.
All right. We begin at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, where the Chiefs host the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I'll take the Chiefs at home. No one beats them there.
Steelers win 36-28, even though Bill Kenny threw for 259 yards. Next, we go up to Orchard Park, New York, at Rich Stadium in Buffalo. The Bills host the Houston Oilers.
I'll take Buffalo at home.
Bills win 20-0. Next, we go down to the Superdome in New Orleans, where the Saints host the Seattle Seahawks.
The Saints suck. I'll go with Seattle on that one.
Dave Craig throws for 282. Steve Largent, 110 yards receiving. Seahawks win 27-3. Next, we go to Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati, the Bengals and the Browns.
Fuck the Browns are kind of good then. That's a tough one. I still say they lose in Cincy.
Boomer throws for 262. Bengals win 27-10. Next, we go to the Vet, for Mr. Brad Woodling's piece of shit Eagles as they host the Atlanta Chadleys. It's the Brad and Chad show face to face, motherfucker, as the Falcons take on the Eagles in Philly.
I'll say the Eagles when that went home.
In overtime, Jaws throws for 258, and the Eagles win 23-17. There you go. Let's go down to Tampa Bay, the Bucks, hosting the Cardinals.
I'm going to say the Cardinals go in there and beat the Bucks.
Bucks throw a shutout, 16-0.
Wow, Cardinals
How about
suck.
That, huh? Yeah, no, really, Cardinals do. Next, we go to the Homer Dome in Minneapolis, where the Vikings will host the Green Bay Packers.
Oof. I'll take the Vikings in that one.
Packers win 27-17, even though Tommy Kramer threw for a buck 41. To the Meadowlands we go. The New York Football Giants host the Los Angeles Rams.
Ooh, it's a battle of Titans. I'll take the Giants.
Giants win 24-19. Phil Sims threw for 239. To Soldier Field we go. The Bears host the Detroit Lions.
Yes, I think the Bears win that one.
They do, 24-3, quite comfortably. Up to Foxborough we go, where the New England Patriots take on the Indianapolis Colts.
I think the Pats win that one.
They do, 34-15. Steve Grogan throws for a buck 90. To RFK Stadium we go, one of the best rivalries in all of sports, as the Cowboys take on the Redskins.
I feel like I'm going with all the home teams, but I was feeling them this week. I take Washington.
Cowboys win, 13-7. Danny White throws for 245. To the Orange Bowl we go. The J-E-T-S, Jets, take on your defending AFC champion, Miami Dolphins.
I'll take the Fins.
Kenny O'Brien throws for 393 yards, and the Jets lose 21-17. Figures, right? Typical Jet game. Mm-hmm. Freeman McNeil rushed for a buck 7. Out at the Murph in San Diego, the Chargers host the Raiders.
I'll take old Fauci.
Old Fauci threw for 436 yards.
Air Coryell, baby.
But it took overtime for the Chargers to win 40-34. I got to look at that. I'm going to click on that real quick. I can click on the box score. I got to look at the box score in that game. I got to see the fuck the deal was in that game. I got to see what fucking Fauci did in that game. I need the regular passing. Here we go. Fouts was 26 for 41, 436 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Very impressive. Mark Wilson was the quarterback for the Raiders, 18 of 32 for 297, so he actually didn't play a bad game either. And on Monday night, from Mile High Stadium in Denver, the Broncos host the San Francisco 49ers.
I'll take the Niners in that one.
Broncos win by a point, 17-16, even though Joe Montana threw for 222 yards. Not bad, JR, a little 50-50.
Yeah, but I only got 5 wrong, I think.
Yeah.
How many
games? Not bad, very solid. There were, 28 teams, I imagine. Let me double check that again.
That's okay.
There were 14 games. So what'd you go, 9-5 probably?
Yep,
9-5.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Not bad at all. All right, in college football, if you remember last week, we were going to have a new number one team because Iowa lost. It was indeed the Florida Gators, and they were number one for a week because Chadley, even though his Falcons lost, his Dogs won. 17th-ranked Georgia beat Florida 24-3. The new number one team of the country would be and of course this was at the peak of what was going on there, number two Penn State. They beat Cincinnati 31-10. Number three, Nebraska blew out Iowa State 49-0. Fourth-ranked Ohio State beat Northwestern 35-17. Number five, Air Force beat Army 45-7. Iowa, who went from number one to number six, took it out on Illinois 59-0. Seventh-ranked Oklahoma beat Missouri 51-6. Eighth-ranked Miami beat Maryland 29-22. Ninth-ranked Michigan blew out Purdue 47-0. And 10th-ranked Oklahoma State beat Kansas State 35-3. Only two games in the NHL. The Bruins beat the Whalers, as they always did back then, 2-1, and the Flyers beat the Blackhawks 6-2. In the NBA, to wrap things up here, there were six games on this day, November 7th. Denver beat Dallas. Clippers lose to Houston. The Nets beat the Bulls. Typical Knick game for Patrick Ewing in his rookie year, led with 24 points, but the Knicks lost by 4 to Milwaukee. Cleveland beat Sacramento by a point. and the Lakers defeated Utah by 10. So there is your NBA report. No concerts going on. Nobody of note passed away or anything else. So that is your pop culture report for this evening, November 7th, 1985. That was what time needed to be made up for all the short matches so we can get the pop culture report out of the way. All right. JR, let's leave the tournament for a moment because guess what?
Ooh.
The World Wrestling Federation Championship is on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Does this show seem like a Crockett type pay-per-view?
No, if it was some Crockett, we'd have Hogan versus, like, I don't know, just someone really, really, like, Beefcake or something. Yeah, like some random, like, half of a tag team.
Hogan versus Spotty.
Yeah. it would have been something a little more off than that. I mean, this was a red-hot feud and a big title match. So, I think a Crockett show, we would have gotten maybe Hogan versus, just, like, Orton or something else.
True. They would have booked the tournament better. I'll give Crockett credit for that. So, all right, JR, this is it. Big title match here. Big title.
Kay Loggins once said, it is it. Vince, Al, and Susan take us through the tracker again, setting up the only match we see for the semifinal. And then Gene chats with the Hulkster, Hulk Hogan, our WWF champion. He says he sat back and watched the tournament and got himself psyched up. He's ready to beat Roddy Piper. The whole world gets to watch this just as they did at Mania. It's Piper's turn to feel what Hulkamania feels like. And Gene says, if Piper doesn't win tonight, he'll have egg on his face because of everything he said over the past few months. Hogan says it's about time he puts Piper down and he hopes Piper is ready. Piper gets the full pipe band entrance and the arena is filled with heat, and that heat morphs into a wild pop as Hogan emerges for the title match. Great usage of this feud, I thought, to buoy this show. Piper jumps Hogan at the bell, knocks him to the floor, and they follows him out. That leads to a brawl on the floor. Hogan whips Piper into the steel railing and hammers away until Piper retreats back inside. As Hogan returns, Piper goes to the eyes and starts to lay in some thrusts to the throat. Piper again goes to the eyes, but Hogan reverses a whip and buries Piper with a clothesline in the corner to a pop. Hogan fires away and drops Piper with a back suplex and then follows with a pair of elbow drops and punches away. As Jesse says, Piper better duck into his bag of tricks for this one. Piper breaks free and goes to the middle rope, but Hogan catches him in a bear hug as he dives off the buckle. Roddy goes to the eyes and breaks a bear hug and slugs away for a near fall. The crowd rallies as rallies Hogan as Piper grabs a sleeper. Hogan briefly grabs the ropes and then rips the referee's shirt for some reason as he fades to the mat. Hulk eventually fights to his feet, leverages them both out to the floor to break the hold. Hogan runs Piper into the post and then hulks up and fends off some right hands. Piper tries to get back inside, but Hogan yanks him back out and punches away. Both eventually make it back in, but Hogan unloads and then hits a big boot and an atomic drop. Piper stays alive and sends Hogan hard into the ref, wiping him out. Piper takes advantage, grabs a chair, and crushes Hogan with it. Hulk blocks a second shot, and they fight over the chair where Hogan eventually pelts Piper with it before grabbing a sleeper on the hot rod. As the referee awakens, Orton shows up and cracks Hogan with the cast. Orton and Piper pummel Hogan until Orndorff makes it the save with a chair to a huge pop. We get a fun brawl, as you would expect, in this match. Piper hung right in there, looks like a strong threat. The finish was fine, too, as Piper wasn't laying down yet, and Orton was always there to get involved. Also, having Orndorff make the save was good to further the friendship and the feud. A worthy title match. Nothing that's blow away, but fitting of their feud and fitting of the show. 2.5 stars, which was fine. You didn't need much more between these two in the show. It's a big-time match to help sell the card. For a show with a tournament, we don't really know any matches beyond the first round. It's always good to have a big match like this to sell as well. So I thought it was a smart usage of Hogan Piper, which we haven't really seen since. I mean, they haven't had a televised one-on-one since the war to settle the score, right?
No, I don't think so. No. No, because we had all the house shows, and of course Hogan wasn't on much at the Garden, so, right, or at all for a stretch.
Or Science Man Event or anything. So, yeah, I mean big rematch. I mean, a match we haven't seen since February. It's been building since then, so a good spot to break this one out.
Yes, I gave this 2.5 as well. I thought it was fun, and I know I talked about this the last time we did this show on a vault. And maybe this is something we got to put out to maybe some of our Place to Be Nation followers on the Facebook page or whatever. I still contend that Piper should have won the title here.
Really?
Yeah, I still think that. I still think Piper should have won the title. And I think it could have been a big build, a great build, and would have led to a nuclear title match at WrestleMania 2. Nuclear.
I don't know.
I still believe it. I don't know why. At this point, Hogan...
No, he's still drawing.
He's the man.
Yeah.
He is drawing, but he could draw without the belt. Chasing for the next few months?
It wasn't their style at this point.
I think it was a miss.
I want you to bring this up with Kelly or even our guest will announce later for our next show on the next one, because I'm curious what they think. They're more versed in the era, you know.
Right.
But it just wasn't their style. Their style was to camp the title out on their big draw, whether it's Bruno, whether it was Pedro, when it was Backlund, and now Hogan. You know, you're not taking it off them until you're absolutely ready to flip it to someone else or you have a big storyline plan. I just think it wasn't their way to flip it to Piper for a few months just to build to Mania. I don't know if they were even planning for Mania at this point. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what they had in mind as that as a show. And I think in their minds, they could build someone, anyone up for a big title match, even Piper again. I mean, I get what you're saying. I just think it's not. It just wasn't their style at this point. I mean, he's only been champion not even 2 years. I mean, that's a blip at this point for them, for their number one, you know, drawing face who's out on every house show, out making the rounds, the face of the company in their growth period. I mean, they are just starting to get their feet under them and grow. I think they wouldn't risk taking the title off Hogan for anything. I think they could have felt like WrestleMania 2 if they already had it planned. They could have a match just as hot as anything, as if Piper would have been defending the title against Hogan there. It just wasn't in their DNA at this point.
I agree with that assessment that that's what they're thinking. However, what I think they needed to start understanding is that this is not Bruno. This is not Backlund. This is not
right,
Pedro.
He's bigger than them.
But you're also in a different era. It was not really just 12 straight house shows. You didn't have closed circuit. You didn't have pay-per-view. You didn't have...
Yeah, but we've only had two of those. It's not like it's a regular thing. I mean, this is just starting. We've had one pay-per-view. I mean, and I don't know if that was even global at that point, were they? I don't even know if they were overseas on that.
Maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, besides Bruno, Hogan's the biggest guy they've had. It's too risky for them at this point. They're still building the company. They're still getting there. To me, if you're not taking that risk yet, it's just they're not there. There's no need to. It's not like Hogan was. You know, I know Kelly's talked about how, like, the second or third time around, sometimes Hogan wouldn't draw, but his first time he sure was. So, I think it would have been too risky for them at this point to even, you know, show a glimpse of Hogan being weak enough to lose a title.
I don't know. I think they should have. I don't know. I just feel like they obviously were having issues because they needed Bruno to do some shows, and I thought maybe if they take the belt off Hogan in some cheap crap fashion, gets hit with the cast or whatever, and see if Hogan starts chasing as number one contender, then perhaps they could kind of rejuvenate if he needed rejuvenating.
Yeah, but was it struggling, or were they just doing, you know, stuff for the local houses? Like Bruno was just kind of working the Northeast here and there. I don't know. I mean, if you want to tell me you think Piper could have won it and had a separate tour, and you're thinking Piper as champion could draw on the B show as much as Hogan on the A show without the belt. I mean, maybe that's a case, but I don't know. I think they're still growing too much.
I think we could have had some. I do. I think we could have had. And I mean, I guess the problem is you've got. You're having, depending on what their plan for the other two belts were, you know, having all these heels. Maybe they had a plan in that they were, you know, you already have tag champs as heels. At the moment, if you have your world champion as a heel, and who knows what, at the time, you didn't know what their plan was for. I mean, they probably had an idea what the IC title plan was. I guess having all three belts as heels, if that was the plan going into WrestleMania 2, was probably not what they were thinking. But
I just don't think they cared about anything else besides Hulk Hogan's our meal ticket. And, you know, it wasn't built into them yet to take the belt off of him. You're not booking. They're not booking show to show. In their minds, Hogan's the ace. He's the draw. He needs to be the champion. He's the face of the company, and he will take on all comers until that no longer works. I mean, I think that's just their plan. That's just what they had in mind, is that they will not touch him until they're forced to touch him. As long as it's working, they don't need to sell additional heat or build anything else. Like, Hogan will have heat against anyone anyway. I mean, I think it's what they're thinking. It's like, why? Piper's already over. Did he really need the title? I don't think so.
I guess my point is, I don't think being over is the question. I think, for me, it's more long-term planning.
But yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Long-term. But I'm talking about...
How does Piper help them?
Because I think Piper could build up some more of these other baby faces over this few-month period.
He can do that anyway, though, can he?
Not without the belt.
Yeah.
Not without the title.
I think a feud with Piper is a big deal anyway. I mean, that's
it is
with Orndorff. I don't think you needed this Orndorff Piper feud. Wouldn't have been any better with the title on it. If you have a Tito Piper feud, like what other baby faces are you building up? I mean, you think Steamboat Tito Piper wouldn't be just as big even without the title?
I guess my point is maybe I'm looking at it for more of a maybe this is where I am, and I said this earlier. The whole you can't use 2017 standards for 1985 thinking because or 2017 thinking right. for 1985 blueprints because it is apples and oranges in that instance.
There's no reason to take it off Hogan. There just isn't. Like nothing sinking, nothing struggling. He's still the guy. There's no like what are you doing to take it off? You think Piper's champion is going to draw better on the house shows than Hogan? I just don't think so. I think they had a formula working that it was not worth tinkering with because they're not there yet. Like, they still have serious competition. They put some territories out of business, but they're not, you know, they're not solidified yet. Like, it's very simply, you know, easily could have fallen apart. If they take the belt off Hogan and people get annoyed and stop coming, I mean, look at AWA, you know, like, they didn't put the belt on Hogan quick enough and they fell apart. So, I mean, it's, you know, it could have all crumbled too quickly if they risked.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The chase worked in the AWA. Hogan chasing Bockwinkel.
Yeah, but now he's been champion. He's been on top of the mountain. Like, Hogan wasn't made to look, I don't say weak, but he hasn't lost yet. He hadn't lost, you know what I mean, in AWA. So he's on the chase. He's building to that point. We've already seen the build. You know, he's here. He's at the top of the mountain. You can't now take the belt off him. I think it just makes him look, I don't know. You put a chink in the armor that doesn't need to be there. For nothing. I mean, what, for 5 months of Piper on, not even 5 months. When was WrestleMania 2?
April 7th.
All right, so five months.
Five months.
Yeah, whatever. So, I mean, for 5 months of Piper on top, you're going to risk, you know, ruining the...
Why is he going to stop drawing because he doesn't have the belt?
Why is Piper going to start drawing? Because he has the belt.
I'm not thinking about... See, here's the
Hogan
difference.
Hogan is. You know, you have to convince me because I'm in the position where Hogan... I have the empirical evidence. Hogan is drawing, and he's awesome as champion. So you need to convince me that it's not going to hurt Hogan and it's going to help Piper. And I'm not convinced that it would have. You know what I'm saying?
I think it's building. You need to create a fresh storyline to build to WrestleMania 2 because he needs to have another big show. He's obviously had WrestleMania 2 as a thought. I think you need to build something. If Hogan's already champion and he got beat up and everything, but I think Piper to this point, and I think he's earned it, and I think Hogan's bulletproof. I think this is not punishing Hogan, but more of, look,
I'm not even talking about punishing anyone. I'm talking about risking your business model.
But is the title the business model?
Hulk Hogan your champion is, yes. They are parading him out everywhere. You're gonna look at it, Scott. It's still in a realm of realism. It's not the prop it is today where you're using it to get other guys over. It is, you know, put in the realm of like boxing or whatever else where your best guy is your champion. So, you know, you're sending Hogan out on these talk shows and on Sports Illustrated and on Saturday, you know, all this other stuff. And he's not your world champion. He's not your best guy. I don't care if he was cheated or anything else. He's not your best guy. This is still in the days of, you know, there was some legitimacy around it. Like Gorilla Monsoon, the greatest professional, you know, athlete in the world today. Like all that stuff. That is Hulk Hogan. He is your best guy. He needs to be your champion. He is unbeatable. He is untouchable. And you don't touch him until you're forced to. Like, to me, WrestleMania 2 can sell itself. Like, it's... They sell the shit on their own. They didn't need Hogan chasing the belt at this point. Like, someone beating up Hogan and then challenging him was enough. I think it was enough. And we see it. I mean, it was enough for a couple more years. You know, if you're talking 2 years from now, you know, then I can see your argument. But right here?
I don't know.
I don't think it's time. It's shit timing for Piper. You know, it sucks for Piper. Because he would have been a great champion. But... I will never blame them for not risking tinkering or touching Hogan's title at this point. Like, it's working. He is a monster. Like, I would not mess with him at all. Just keep finding guys to feed to him. You'll find someone. Pay guys. Go wherever you got to go. You just brought in Terry Funk. You just brought in Randy Savage. You have guys you've been building up. You know, you got Andre in your back pocket. You got, you know, Bruiser Brody out there. You know, you have Ric Flair. You know, there's guys you can maybe pay to come in. Don't fuck with it. You'll find someone else. Like, as great as Piper is, you don't have to pull the trigger just yet. There's guys out there. Jerry Lawler. You know, like, there's a million guys out there that could have paid to come in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious to see what Kelly and our other special guests will have on soon. I'm curious of their opinion. They'll probably agree with you. But I just think that I thought it wouldn't have hurt to give it a test. I don't think – I think you're – I think –
No, you don't test. You don't test. There's no reason to test. It's working. Why are you testing?
Because
new Coke. You're trying to be new Coke. You already have Coke. It's working. It's great. You're selling millions. Why are you fucking with it? Stop tinkering. Don't tinker.
I still think that
– You're tinkering.
Why isn't he at the Garden anymore?
It's like you have Tom Brady in your lineup, fantasy football, playing against, I don't know, give me a shit team, the Dolphins. Whatever. And you're taking, oh, but you know what? I don't know, Carson Palmer's been playing well, and he's home against the 49ers. You know, like, just, no. Go with your stud. Stop tinkering. Just roll your stud out there. Just stay with your stud. Don't tinker until you're forced to. Make Hogan give you a reason to take the title off him. He hasn't done that yet.
That's true. That is true. What if Moondog Spock came out and accidentally hit Hogan with the button? Never mind. Hogan retains his title. The match ends in a mess, which we knew was going to happen anyway. Hogan, Piper was not going to lose clean. And, you know, guys are making money. So I guess it makes sense. But I would have been fascinated to see if they attempted to do that. But like I said, and to prove my point from earlier, it's very hard to use 2017 logic in a 1985 business model. So you're right about that. All right, so Hogan retains the title. Let's get back to the tournament, JR. Is it time for the car? Or do we not have the car yet. Car's not ready yet. Okay.
Yeah, we go backstage where Gene is talking to JYD. He has his bye. He's awaiting the finals. JYD says he's lost 20 pounds. He's ready to go. That must be the 20 that Don has found. Gene says if he wins, we'll be juking in Chi-Town. Jimmy Hart comes in and rants and raves about JYD cheating as we head to the ring. So everyone's always, you know, very easily gaining and losing 20 pounds left and right.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Dynamite Kid and Randy Savage are only semi-match. Dynamite hops in the ring as he is set for the biggest match of his WWF career to date. Savage and Liz again, Scott, a third full entrance. Savage now one win away from the finals. Dynamite gets a nice ovation. This has been a good stock raising for him. Gorilla, again, says Savage is not very macho after he used Liz as a shield last match. Another great match on paper, which has been a big theme tonight. Gets some feeling out and jockeying to start as Gorilla says neither man has a speed advantage here in this one. The tussling and counters continue with neither gaining an advantage. Gorilla and Jesse debate Liz's value as Savage sucker punches Dynamite during a referee break. Savage runs DK into the corner and then lands some strikes until the Kid punches his way back into things. Kid grabs a side headlock and then levels Savage with a hard shoulder block. Dynamite takes Savage over the backdrop and gets a cross body block for a pin attempt broken by the ropes. Kid tries for a sunset flip, but Savage blocks by slamming down hard on Dynamite. After a crisscross, both men collide with clotheslines, and with neither man up, Jesse said it'd be perfect JYD manner to win via two byes if these guys both get counted down. Savage slowly climbs to the top. Dynamite cracks him with a dropkick and then takes him down with a top rope superplex that shocks Jesse and Gorilla. When they land, Savage cradles Dynamite's legs and gets the win. Another really fun match that could have been iconic if they had more time. As it was filled with quick hitting strikes, nice drama, and I think it's the debut. They acted like it was at the top row superplex. Just pops everyone like crazy. Savage steals another win that ends the Kid's dream run here tonight. I went 2 stars. Again, a match that could have been so much more, but as is really fun. And that top row superplex was awesome, and it comes into play later as well.
It does, and I gave it 2 stars as well. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was an easy match to probably book. And Savage worked his ass off. And I think that's what Vince was going with when he booked this tournament. I think that Savage was the one that needed to kind of prove to Vince that, hey, I could be a hoss for you. You know, I could be a workhorse for you anywhere in the country, anytime you want me to. Because he's wrestled 3 utter studs in, well, I guess Paduski is kind of one as well. I guess you got to, you know, you kind of work with a piece of meat. And then now back to back, he's worked with exceptional technical guys. And I think he's worked his butt off. He could have easily, I mean, too bad he, you know, he cheated a lot and, you know, he treated Liz like shit. But had he just been a straight up worker, you could contend that Savage almost could have turned babyface in this match. Hey, the crowd's starting to dig him now anyway. You know, even with, you know, Jesse's, you know, secret approvals. I think Savage would have been really over with the fans had, you know, he not had Liz, you know, abusing, or he was abusing her. I think Savage would have ended up being maybe even a babyface by 86. But any event, Randy Savage is in your main event. You're in your finals of this tournament, which I think we saw coming kind of from a mile away. And now we go backstage.
Because we go to the ring.
Oh, I thought they went backstage and then went to the ring. Okay.
Yeah, we're right in the ring. The Fink brings out Jack Tunney, Basil DeVito, and Ed Dibershaw, the firm that handles the submissions. He's representing them. They all make quick statements about the Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud Classic giveaway, and they all get booed pretty much. Lord Al then announces the winner, Michael Hanley from Batavia, Illinois, and the crowd boos him too. So I think they're maybe done, not tired, I don't know, but none of them seem happy that this guy won a car. Good to see Basil out there, though. So
what was it called again? What was the official name of the car?
The Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud Classic.
Silver Cloud. I kept calling it a Shadow, but same thing.
I think you were just making fun of Lord Al driving a Dodge Shadow. That's what I figured.
Yeah, with What's-Her-Face tied in the trunk.
Josh Richard.
Yes. All right.
Now
so
we go backstage. That's where Gene is with Hulk Hogan in the locker room. They break down the title match with Roddy Piper. Orndorff walks in, and Hogan says they're down for a tag match with Piper and Orton at any time. Orndorff says whenever they have a singles match with those guys, the other one always gets involved. Him and Hogan are blood, and will take them on anywhere. Hogan says they have a little surprise in store for them as well.
Would have been better if Hogan came in exasperated that he lost his championship and
everyone would
fight for the next 5 months to get it back. And now, our main event, the big finals of our tournament. Who will win the undisclosed cash prize?
Yes.
Whatever the hell
who
it was.
Who will have their ticket? Punch yes. their own ticket. Make their own way, whatever Gorilla said earlier.
Yeah. You punch your ticket to anything you want, Jesse. Mm-hmm. That's right, Gorilla. And it
Savage?
Is, of course, yeah, and the JYD.
All right. Savage limps to the ring, clearly hurting, escorted by Liz. Jesse puts over his guts, says JYD's been laying around sleeping while Savage has been in tough matches.
Probably not far from the truth.
Savage again uses Liz as a shield and then bails to gather himself before the match. Savage tries to bring a chair in but gets thwarted, and then he finally enters and gets things rolling. JYD wins a couple of lockups and drills a headbutt to the lower back, followed by an atomic drop. Jesse talks about how Dynamite took its toll. That match took its toll on Savage, hurting his quickness. And that plays out here. You can tell he's really hurting. Really selling mm-hmm. that superplex. JYD locks in a bear hug as Gene comes down to ringside and Jesse grills him. I don't know if he thinks it's fair to Savage. And Gene says it's all based on the luck of the draw. The dog keeps pummeling Savage, but Macho cuts him down with a clothesline for two. Savage dumps JYD to the floor and then meets him with a double axe off the top rope. Savage works him over on the floor, ramming him into the post and then leveling him with another axe handle. Savage pelts him with a chair and then chokes him over the steel fence. Savage pitches JYD back inside, but dog drills him with a punch to the gut as he comes off the top. JYD unloads some headbutts, which ends with Savage tied in the ropes. Macho works free and charges JYD, but dog ducks and backdrops him to the floor for a countout win. JYD wins the classic. Gene chats with the dog after, but Jesse comes in and rips on the buy situation, says it's cheap, and that Savage should be declared the winner. I thought this whole thing was weird, the way it went down. I mean, I get it. I'm all for not pinning Savage. It's fine, but I don't know. The count out, and then Jesse is like, I mean, he's not wrong with all the buy stuff, but the way he's talking about it is just so odd. It's like saying it's illegal and it's cheap and all this other shit, like, I mean, that's a tournament rules. I mean, that's how it goes. It's just a weird tax for him to take. Like, it was overbearing with Jesse into the Savage stuff this time, I thought. It was just too much. I thought it was starting to actively hurt Savage by the end of this. But the finish does protect him, and it pays off the back injury that hurt him in the match. Savage, I thought, should have actually just won and just set him up as a mega challenger for Hogan. But obviously, they wanted a face to win this. And JYD is a fine enough choice. He was less tired thanks to the easy path. So it actually, the kayfabe way makes sense that he should win. But Savage was great in this match, as always. Really good at using the entire ringside area for offense. That's one thing I've noticed, Scott, as we watched his early matches here. He just uses every inch of real estate he has out there. Savage's back issues put over the severity of Dynamite's new superplex as well. So that was another plus. I went 2 stars for the selling of Savage and for putting over the superplex. But I thought Savage should have won here, and I thought the JYD stuff, made him look soft, and I thought Jesse was way over the top.
I gave it 1.5 stars, and I think Savage should have won won the tournament. But JYD's business model is he can't lose; he's making big money. No, I'm only kidding. This whole thing was a fucking mess. Why didn't Savage just win the tournament? Again, did we really have to be this kayfabe with all the baby faces looking good? I mean, for Christ's sakes, it's just stupid. Whole tournament was dumb. Booked poorly, shitty endings, weird guys going on, and then JYD does look like a fucking hump.
Yeah.
Does he win one match?
I mean,
legit?
Jesse spends the whole match talking about how fucking fat and lazy he is. You know what I mean? Like, he just trashes him the whole match. So why even bother having him win? He just shit all over him. He basically said he did nothing to win the tournament.
He didn't.
Yeah. No, I know. But, I mean, yeah. you can cover for it. You know what I mean? Like,
I know, yeah. You know,
Jesse's just blatantly calling it out that he's done nothing. He wrestled Iron Sheik for 3 minutes. You know, spot wasn't even a match, and then this. So he basically wrestled one and a half matches.
Yeah.
But you don't want to call attention to it. It's just, it makes it look stupid. It delegitimizes the tournament too. It's just, I don't know. The whole night was just such odd booking across the board.
It was the shits. It really was. Tried so hard to make all the baby faces look great that you booked yourself into a conundrum. And it failed miserably. And I think that's probably why they never did it again. It just did not go over well. And JYD wins. Nobody gives a shit. Savage worked his ass off. And I think that's where Savage's legacy really begins on this night. He works his butt off. You know, he has to carry Paduski for 4 minutes or whatever. And then back-to-back matches with two exceptional workers in Steamboat and Dynamite Kid. And then you got to carry this fat ass for, you know, 5 minutes or whatever the hell. I don't even know what was the final timing of that. 9:42 he had to carry his fucking lazy ass. And it doesn't even end clean. Just, it's such a mess. Absolute mess. And I could argue that, you could argue that maybe this kind of stunted a lot of the momentum of what was going on in 85. Because the Saturday's main event was hot. We had some great TV. We've had some great house shows at the Garden.
I don't know. I feel like this, it's just a blip. This was, I don't think it hurts any momentum. I mean, I don't think they had momentum then. It wasn't like now. It's not like, oh, I got screwed by this pay-per-view. I'm not watching anymore. Well, you know, I'm canceling the network. I mean, to me, it's just like, you know, this was the norm. I don't know. It's just, like, it was weird booking, but I don't think it felt that out of place in the time. So I don't think it hurt them. I mean, it maybe hurt the credibility of a tournament, but I don't think it hurt, like, where they were at as a company.
No,
if
I guess
Piper
not.
Won the belt, you may have.
Well, if Piper won the belt and Savage won the tournament, it'd be the greatest pay-per-view ever. And then Hogan would have had to, you know, actually wrestle at the Garden. Yeah. No. Anyway,
I think Piper's wrestled just as much as him, by the way.
Probably. Well, at least he shows up at the Garden. Yeah. He's had like 3 pits. Yeah. So at least he's done something at the Garden. You stupid wop. But, anyway, they were working so hard in the cave. This is like the worst example of over kayfabe-ness, kayfabosity, that you need to have all these baby faces win and all the heels look like fucking dopes. And you tried so hard to achieve those goals that you booked yourself into a complete mess. And whatever. In Vince's mind, the fans left happy. There are two big baby faces. Hogan and JYD came out winners, even though Savage worked his ass off and JYD didn't do dick. You know, Hogan, you know, keeping the belt, it works. But overall, this show just seemed very disjointed. It almost – it will happen with Crockett in a few years. I think – It happened to them when they did Bunkhouse Stampede at Nassau. I think in theory or on paper, Vince had a different idea for how this was going to come off, and then execution-wise, it just didn't live up to the expectation maybe he thought he had in his mind. And that's what happened. So the Junkyard Dog wins a tournament with no undisclosed trophy. Hulk Hogan is still your champion.
And then we go backstage. God, we're not done yet.
Oh, my God.
Vince, Al, and Susan wrap things up. Oh. Alfred says it's the best night he's ever had. That's what he literally said.
Jeez, I wonder why.
And then Susan says she's never seen so much action in her life. So who knows what was happening when the camera's not on these two. Al says he'll set up Susan to take a ride in the Rolls Royce. And then we wrap up with a video package to Flash. WCF.
The Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
WCF. Yes. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom.
All right,
yes.
Let's give some awards and get the fuck out of here.
We got to do awards.
All right, match of the night. I went with Hogan Piper, Scott. I thought that was the best match. We've had some really good stuff on paper, but to me, that was the highest. But again, for a show that had how many matches? 15? 16?
Something like, well, let's see.
15
eight,
matches.
12, yeah, 15.
So a show that had 15 matches, only, you know, for me, this was the only match that broke 2 stars. This was 2.5. I had nothing else over 2 stars.
I didn't even.
So to me, that shows, you know, again, I know 85 is not about star ratings, but just a lack of overall quality on the show. Mm-hmm. All right, worst match.
It's hard because you really can't count the duds because they were meant to be that way.
Right. I went with JYD versus Spot only because it was such a fucking mess with the no ref and everything else.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, that's the Drizzler award.
That's our, the Drizzler.
MVP of the evening, I went with Randy Savage. I thought obviously it was his night. Everything was built around him. He looked like a star. He stole the show. I thought he was the best guy on this evening without question.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. I agree with that. No doubt.
The Gator Wolf Award for the worst worker. Again, a tricky one, and I feel bad because I thought he was actually okay in the match, but when I look up and down the card, I think there's one guy that stands out to me as the worst worker on this evening, and that's Ivan Paduski.
Yep, I have to agree with Ivan. You took the answer right out of my head. I agree with Mr. Paduski.
All right. Best moment of the evening, I went with Orndorff saving Hogan. And I give a little nod to Spot and Funk, like outsmarting Funk. Like, that was kind of fun. But to me, the best moment of the night was Orndorff making the save.
Yes, I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, because they were pushing him pretty hard, so.
Yeah, and that was a big deal for their friendship to go there. The Junior Mr. Universe Award, Scott, the most roided up man of the evening, I went with...
Dynamite Kid?
Yeah, he was pretty big. I mean, Putski's pretty big. Hogan's pretty big. I don't know. You have Dynamite?
I had Dynamite. Dynamite was pretty shredded.
All right, we'll go with Dynamite. That's fun. Right. That's fine. I can go
he was pretty shredded.
Overall grade, Scott, I went... there's so much good with Savage here, and there's so many fun like bursts of dream matches, but the booking just knocks it back for me. It's so bad. You know, it's fun on its own merits from a nostalgia point of view, but when you really look at what got accomplished, it was very little. But it did, you know, it was a star performance for Savage. I went 4 out of 10 on this.
I'm giving this a 3. Oh, I was terribly disappointed. The booking was abysmal. Poor Savage had to work his butt off and got nothing out of it. The title match was fine. It was the best match of the night. But this tournament, whole thing was just a booking shit show. It really was. And I could see why they never attempted this. They haven't attempted a major tournament for another 3 years. 3 years. So, or 2.5 years, I guess. Such a mess. So, I don't think I could. Since February of 2014... when the network launched, we're talking about 3 years and 2 months, there's two shows that I wish to never watch again, at least for the next 10 years or ever, and that is this and that Halloween Saturday main event that we did last, because I've already watched that like 11 times since the network launched, and this is also pretty close. If I never watch these two things again, I'm perfectly fine. Right. So,
well, this one's in the books, as some may say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Scott, we are now off for a couple weeks. Of course, next week coming off of Mania. I'll still be away, so you know it's just going to be a short week. We're going to take the week off. We'll be back on April 10th, and we're going to nearly complete. We're going to bring our third Titan of Wrestling for this show. Our buddy Pete Schermacher is going to join us to look at the November 25th, 85 MSG House show. I'll be seeing Pete down at the Orlando tailgate, so we'll be talking all about it, I'm sure.
Excellent.
And we're actually sitting together, too, for the show. So we'll have 9 hours at the WrestleMania, too.
Yeah, you get enough of them.
Maybe we'll watch it on our phone to we'll prep together. So Pete will be with us in 2 weeks, and Scott, Pete's also with us tomorrow night for our WrestleMania preview weekend edition of Clotheslines and Headlines. It is a very focused edition of the show. We're going to preview WrestleMania and NXT with the Cowboy, Mr. Morissette, who will be joining me, of course, in Orlando. And then Pete will be joining us to talk all non-WWE things. He'll talk all the WWN shows going on Friday and then everything else across the weekend that he wants to cover, ROH and whatnot. So two guests tomorrow night only. And then, of course, me, Steve, and Nate will be manning the booth as well. So Clotheslines and Headlines special Monday edition. And that is because, Scott, what's coming up on Wednesday?
Wednesday, we have the super gigantic mega episode of the main event. It is our WrestleMania preview. We will preview NXT TakeOver. We will preview the big show. We will talk Hall of Fame. We are going to have JR. We got a boatload of confirmations. We could have up to 9 guys on that show on Wednesday night. So it is going to be a mega powerhouse preview. It's a big week here at PlacementNation.com. It's always the biggest week of the year here because it is WrestleMania week. So we're going to have the 3 heavyweight shows this week, you and I right now. Clotheslines and Headlines tomorrow, and main event on Wednesday, and back-to-back main events, folks, because I'll be back the following Wednesday for the recap show. We'll talk everything recapping the weekend, and we, of course, by then, both the Raw after and SmackDown Live after would have aired, so that'll be a huge show. So the next 2 weeks of main events, you do not want to miss. It is going to be top-line talent, top-line analysis, It's going to be pretty awesome. So good week coming up.
Correct. Mania will be done and buried by that point. We'll be on to the next boring year. But no, so lots to cover. WrestleMania week, always a fun one here at PlayStation.com. Mm-hmm. Of course, we'll be wrapping up our WrestleMania List of Mania series as well. Mm-hmm. Almost there into the final week. 33 lists in 33 days, Scott. Nearing the big finale, and the last one will roll out on Saturday.
Been a lot of fun.
So we'll have closing headlines. We will have main event, and of course, all the reaction shows as well over the weekend. So be on the lookout for those. So Scott, that's it. Next time I talk to you, we'll be into the new wrestling year, but we'll still be back in 1985 with Pete Schermacher talking November 85 MSG. Until then, everyone have a great weekend, a great week, and a great weekend. Enjoy WrestleMania for what you can. Enjoy all the surrounding shows, and just kick back and enjoy being a fan. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
You can talk about Argentinian cinema at the tailgate.
Ah, yes, my extra queen size backseat.